Welcome to Manga Cubed, episode 91, your one stop for manga news and commentary from March 31st, 2014. I am your main host, Derek, and I am joined by my co-host, Zorblark the Conqueror. And Zorblark can only communicate in those kind of utterances, so it looks like you'll just be listening to me this entire time. Indeed. It's too bad Mo isn't here right now, because if he was, he could do the news instead of me. Well, I guess I better do the news here, unless, Zorblark, did you have anything you wanted to say? Yeah, I don't have the fortitude that it takes to keep this up. Okay, Mo, you can stop.
Okay, I'll stop. I don't know what I'm doing.
I do want to say, though, that you should all, if you aren't listening to the One Piece podcast yet, you should all go listen to it, because they did a great April Fool's, well, it wasn't really an April Fool's joke, it was more like a gimmick, but basically what they did is two of their they had a bunch of sort of like, you know, side hosts or co-hosts, well, yeah, just sort of like guests, not even actual hosts. They had a bunch of guests that were running the podcast, while the main host and one of his co-hosts were toys. As in, they were toys as they appear in One Piece. So nobody could remember them. And it's actually really kind of fun. And then they go all the way through that until the end of the manga recap. It's a lot of fun. I recommend everyone go listen to that, at least that episode, if you haven't listened to any of their episodes before. But, okay. Well, let's go ahead and do the news, shall we? Starting with the Japanese comic rankings for March 17th through the 23rd. Okay. And starting in 10th place, The Knight of the Area, Volume 40.
In 9th place, Kindaichi Shonen no Jikenbo R, Volume 1.
In 8th place, we have Koe no Katachi, Volume 3.
7th place, Moyashimon, Volume 13.
In 6th place, we have One Piece, Volume 73.
5th place, Skip Beat, Volume 34.
4th place, Ace of Diamond, Volume 40.
3rd place, Uchu Kyodai, also known as Space Brothers, Volume 23.
2nd place, Jojo Leon, Volume 6.
And 1st place, Fairy Tail, Volume 42.
First place on its first week, but keep in mind, it didn't sell even a fraction of what One Piece sold, but it still did really well. And it's beaten out One Piece on One Piece's third week. That's actually kind of impressive, considering the numbers that One Piece has been selling. Yep. But, yep, well, that is that. Let's just go ahead and cover the New York Times bestseller list quickly. 10th place, we have Blue Exorcist, Volume 11.
9th place, March Story, Volume 5.
8th place, Attack on Titan, Junior High.
Oh, okay. 7th place, Alice in the Country of Clover, March Hare, Volume 11.
6th place, we have Attack on Titan, Volume 10.
5th place, UQ Holder, Volume 1.
4th place, Nisekoi, False Love, Volume 2.
3rd place, Attack on Titan, Volume 2.
2nd place, Attack on Titan, Volume 1.
1st place, Attack on Titan, Before the Fall, Volume 1.
Jeez.
That's still, wow, Attack on Titan staying there. It's like, we're on the... Like,
That's doing some good numbers. And I also noticed that it was, at my local Barnes & Noble, they have a big display of it up. Well, I mean, not, you know, big front and center, but, you know, they have it there, a fairly decent-sized display around near where the comics are, so...
How many months has that been?
It's been forever. I can't remember the exact details.
The second volume been on the list for 24 weeks, so 24 divided by 4, 6 months.
Yeah, well, it's not consistently that long. It's more like on one, a couple weeks off, and then it gets back on and so on.
Okay.
Yeah, that actually reminds me, when do the DVDs come out? Let's see, switch.
DVDs are what made it popular.
Yeah, well, the DVDs haven't come out, but the anime is what made it popular. Oh, it's still in June. Right. Okay. Let's see. Blu-ray DVDs. Limited edition or regular? Non-limited edition. I think I know which one I'd prefer. Uy, that's a lot. All right, then. We have the North American anime and manga releases from March 23rd to the 29th.
That is a long list.
Oh, geez. And we start off with Dragon Half DVD.
Fairy Tale DVD and Blu-ray Part 9.
Fist of the North Star, this TV series DVD Complete Series Collection.
Ghost Stories DVD Complete Collection.
Nice. Let's see. Is this a zombie DVD and Blu-ray complete series? Anime classics. Wait, how does that qualify as an anime classic?
What?
That is like maybe that is only a couple of seasons old. What are you doing, Funimation?
Whatever. No, I think someone's pulling that. I think someone, you know, doing the news did put that by accident.
That can't possibly be an anime classic. That's ridiculous. That's like, what, maybe 2-3 years old at most?
Oh, yeah.
Alright, well, what's this next one we have here?
Lupin the Third. Bye-bye, Lady Liberty.
Nice.
DVD.
Should look into that. Let's see. Marduk Scramble the Third Exhaust Blu-ray Director's Cut and DVD Director's Cut.
Maria Holic Alive Blu-ray Complete Collection and DVD. And DVD Complete Collection.
Yeah, this is a case where getting the Blu-ray is definitely worth it because it's only $10 more expensive than the DVD.
Sentai Filmworks is doing it right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Pokemon Black and White Rival Destinies DVD Set 2.
Oh, hey. Rio Rainbow Gate DVD Complete Series.
I'm not paying for that.
Yeah, I know.
Well, it's only $20. All right. The Ranma 1/2 Blu-ray Set 1 Special Edition and the Ranma 1/2 DVD Set 1. Now that one, on the other hand...
$10 extra.
Yeah, let me pull this up on Amazon. All right, what else? What do we have next?
Robotics Notes DVD Blu-ray Part 2.
Interesting. Yeah. Abusive use of the semicolon. Yeah, but
I just like that abusive use of the semicolon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh! Season 4 DVD Complete Collection or the Volume 1 and Volume 2 separate. I don't know why you would, but okay then.
Don't understand, but okay.
Yep. All right. What do we have for manga releases?
Are You Alice? Volume 4.
And we have Blood Lad, Bloody Brat, Volume 1.
That's actually a sequel, apparently. I looked it up.
Interesting.
Bloody Cross, Volume 2.
Castle Mango, Volume 2.
And the publisher, I think I have an idea what that is. Eden, It's an Endless World, Volume 14.
Fairy Tale, Volume 36.
Yeah, I took a look at this. Holy Night. Volume 1.
Oh dear. Yep, that is an adult. Alright. Kingdom Hearts, 358 by 2 Days, Volume 3.
Oh, my dear. Late Bloomers.
Uh-huh.
Also an adult.
Mobile Suit Gundam, The Origin, Volume 5.
More porn, my pretty idol girlfriend.
Puella Magi, and no, just kidding. Nurse's Secret. Guess what that is?
It starts with a P and ends with an N.
Or with an S sometimes.
Four letters, but okay. And next is Nyotai Ka, Volume 2. Also starts with a P and ends with an N.
Mm-hmm. Puella Magi Madoka Magica, The Different Story, Volume 1.
Guessing it's an alternate telling to the original.
Yeah.
Ooh, hey look, it's finally out. Seven Deadly Sins, Volume 1.
What the hell?
Yeah, the
How'd that sneak up on us?
It snuck up on us last week.
Oh, jeez. Screw the recording. I need to go to Barnes & Noble. No, just kidding. Oh no, I won't be able to do it tonight. Dang it. Where do you want to go? Oh well, whatever. Let's see, what do we have? Soul Eater, Volume 19.
Splash to Love, Volume 1. Yes.
Sword Art Online, Aincrad, Volume 1.
What did you eat yesterday? Volume 1.
None of your damn business. Wolf Children, Ame and Yuki, which is just a single volume story, it looks like.
And they, D.E., Volume 8, Born.
Yep, interesting title. See any
the Yahweh, I think I looked that one up.
Is it? That looks like a Yahweh, yep. Okay. Alright then, and for other releases, we've got BlazBlue Chrono Phantasma for the PS3.
It's BlazBlue.
Whatever.
Z is silent. I know, I don't understand myself. I hate that.
Gosh darn it.
Don't play this game.
Wait, what else do we have?
Deception 4, Blood Time for the PS3, PS Vita, and then Dynasty Warriors 8, Extreme Legends for the PS3, and The Witch in the 109th PS3 for the PS3.
Cool. Alright, well,
they all cost so much except for the last one.
Alright then, and that does it for the releases. What other news do we have?
Okay, the Iron Knight manga ends in Weekly Shonen Jump. Well, it already ended.
That one. That one I read the first couple chapters and didn't have any reason to continue, really. I mean, it was an interesting premise, but I don't know. They just didn't have that.
I tried to read it. I really tried to read it, but then when the bunny girl came on, I was like, what the heck is going on? It feels like Alice. It's like she's like trying to do Alice in Wonderland or something.
There was a bunny girl?
Yeah, the bunny girl. She appeared in chapter 4 or something.
Yeah, I think my problem was that I read like the one-shots and I was not impressed by them. So even after reading the first chapter and being somewhat impressed, but
the one-shot was pretty good, but I think from what I read about the comments about the series itself, that some people were pretty much pointing out how the main character, being like 10 years old, he knew how to fight, he knew tactics and stuff already. It's like, what the heck, really?
That is kind of stupid.
That is stupid. That is incredibly stupid. I mean, it has the premise, but it also felt like...
It is one of the downsides of having young characters as the main, as the main character, because it just feels, fake.
Yeah.
In that, it's like,
would a 10-year-old kid actually be able to be able to actually fight and act like this? No, I would probably do something to my pants.
yeah, if I were 10 in that way, yeah. That, I don't get it. Oh, well. But anyway, what else do we have?
Even if that, hopefully Yagi, the creator, will learn from this.
Yeah, use older characters.
Okay, this is a series I remember watching as an anime a long time ago. But apparently it had a manga. Stealing Your Kurumi, Destiny Destroying Meetings creator starts 2x2 manga. The story goes two pairs of siblings, one with an older brother and a younger sister, and one with an older sister and younger brother, who all have secrets. The story follows the prank of destiny. The interesting thing is that this duo of Hitoshi Ota and Teramasa Shichinohe, they created Stealing Your Kurumi, Magical Meow Meow Taruto, UFO Ultra Maiden Valkyrie. I'm looking at the DVD, I have it right now, and I'm just wondering, well, that makes sense. I didn't even open it yet. Key Princess Story, Eternal Alice Rondo, Kanazuki no Miko, Destiny of the Shrine Maiden. Oh, wait, they did it too? Interesting. And Kyoshiro no Toa no Sora, also known as Shattered Angels, which all inspired anime adaptations. Wow, I actually know 3D series that these guys made, even though I only... seen about two of them, ish.
I
think. Yeah.
Cool. All right.
The whole summary doesn't really give an idea what is going on. I have no idea, but.
Right. Okay. Well, let's see. What else do we have?
Digital manga ads called Tora San, Aria the Scarlet manga on eManga. And add Sweet Blue Flowers, Kimagure, Orange Road, Asobi, Nikkyo, as well. Should I describe them?
Yeah.
As well. Okay. Yeah. Kotora-san follows Haruka Kotora, a girl who suffered during her childhood because of her ability to read minds. When she started high school, she meets Manabe, her classmate who often thinks about erotic things and joins a club of people who are not afraid of her ability. Her gloomy life starts to become enjoyable. Wait.
Hmm. Interesting.
Okay. Mm. Okay. This one caught my interest because... Okay, the next one. Aria the Scarlet Amel. Really? Scarlet Amel, huh?
Mm.
Yeah. The story takes place in Tokyo Butei High School, a special school where armed detectives Butei are trained to use weapons. Kenji Toyama is a second-year student who has a special ability, but he keeps it a secret to maintain an ordinary, peaceful life. However, when he gets caught in the bombing on the way to school, believe me, I saw a bit of the first episode. This actually happened. He encounters H. Aria Kanzaki. Guessing that her name is Hidan Aria Kanzaki. The most powerful S-rank Butei student in assault studies. It feels really weird saying Butei.
Butei. Alright, interesting. Well,
okay, well, yeah. Moving on. The rest is on Anime News Network.
Yeah.
Okay. Comic Walker app launches 18 manga titles in English, and I recognize a few of them that I have actually read.
Oh, okay. Which ones do you recognize?
Okay. There's Neon Genesis Evangelion. There's Sergeant Frog and High School D.O.D. Frog.
Oh, Sergeant Frog.
And that last one, the one with the really long title, Become Mine, Hero, and then the response is, I refuse. That series. The big politics stuff going on. I don't understand that series. How about
it? Well, I should look the Comic Walker app up quickly.
Talk to Jesse. Okay. Moving on.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, move on.
Kaoru Mori's A Bride's Story wins 7th Annual Manga Taisho Award.
Oh, cool. Good job. Well done.
Good job.
Well done, madam.
Okay, this one's really interesting here. Osamu Tezuka's daughter reveals newly discovered sketches.
Oh, dear.
I looked at it, and...
One must look at it to truly understand that this man had a weird mind.
I can't even show it. It's basically the last two sentences pretty much say, the drawings include drafts of marvelous Melmo's protagonist and risque sketches of a female mouse. This is Osamu Tezuka, people.
Well, do keep in mind he was inspired by Disney.
Yeah.
But even Disney didn't draw mice quite that sexy.
No, they didn't.
So this is, yeah, quite silly, I must say.
Kinda would make sense now.
Yeah. Honestly, you should just look it up on, Anime News Network to really get the full impact of what's going on.
Yeah, okay, next one. One Piece Books. Not the manga One Piece, but the publishing company One Piece.
Huh.
Books or ads. Masao Yajima and Boichi's Rakia Manga.
Hmm.
Whoa, this is quite an interesting summary.
Interesting. What does it give us the gist?
A truck driver loses control in the Nevada desert, leaves one family dead in an explosive crash. There's only one sole survivor, Luna Hazuki, who makes a pact with a mysterious demon to regain the happiness that was robbed from her. 7 years later, she's still living with a family that was supposed to be dead. But little does Luna know that the pact she made will lead to the apocalypse and the end of the human race.
Well, that sounds kind of interesting.
Save her family, but doom the entire world. Okay.
Yeah. All right. This next
sounds
bit of
cool.
Yeah, these next two bits of news are kind of crazy.
They're fairy tale, actually.
Yes, okay. we finally learn exactly what Mashima's other manga is going to be.
It's not ecchi, thank goodness.
Well, no guarantees there yet, but hopefully not. Yep. All right, tell us, what's this all about?
Okay, monthly fairy tale magazine to launch with Fairy Tale Zero manga. So basically, Fairy Tale It's going to have its own magazine. The original series will still continue in Weekly Shonen magazine, but in this one, its own magazine will actually have the story of the first Fairy Tail Guild Master.
Oh,
yeah,
interesting. The
Fairy Tail Guild.
Yes, this promises to actually be interesting. Yeah, this promises to be interesting. You know, it'd be really awesome if he somehow uses this kind of as an opportunity to sort of combine both series together into one, like, you know, start a story on one end and then do his time travel nonsense and tie it all together and stuff.
That would be nice.
Yeah. But yeah, okay, yeah, what else do we need to know about this?
With the whole crossovers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So, this is what Majima says about being annoyed that he'll be working on two series. Yeah, I'm going to be in hell.
Well, he knows what that's like, so.
He's done it before.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy that it's the entire series is getting its own magazine. Not even One Piece has its own magazine, which seems like a series, well, its own magazine for spin-off manga, but then again, One Piece is all about just the One Piece. It's a little, you gotta respect it for that. But still, it does seem like an oversight that they wouldn't have a all One Piece manga magazine, you know? Because there are so many stories that you could tell in the One Piece world, but I probably,
I guess it's probably how Majima's gonna actually, like, tie in some fairy tale stuff that we wish we would know that we would do in the manga. Like, you know, this is his own way of adding the tale to it without clumping it all up in the manga itself.
Yeah, it is definitely, and it's, you know, and also I find that his kind of his stuff that he does outside of the main manga tends to be a bit better, I've noticed.
Yeah, so this is good. If this is strong field, then he's actually doing a good job picking this field to do.
Yeah, so we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what this is all about. So he'll be. I'm definitely curious, and I imagine Crunchyroll will probably get the rights to simul-publish the manga. So I look forward to that. All right, do we have any other news?
No, not really.
All right then, let's go ahead and move on to the next segment. It's time for the manga review for this week. And this week, we are talking about Fairy Tail, Volume 36, the latest volume of Fairy Tail. And we are continuing our review of One Piece by discussing One Piece Volumes 13, 14, and 15.
Yeah.
So we've got a bit of a stack here to go over, so we'll want to get started on that. And yeah. All right, let us begin. First off with the latest volume, Fairy Tail 36. All right then, Mo, you want to give a quick recap of what happens in this volume?
Okay, okay, so basically after Sting and Rhodes lost against Natsu.
Yeah.
What's his name? Jerk-faced leader of Sabretooth. Genma.
All right, yeah.
He's like, oh, you fool, you morons, I'm gonna kick you out of here. And then all of a sudden he's like, wait, it's not their fault. And then he's like, wait, why is this cat wearing our symbol? It's like, I'm a member of Sabretooth too. And he's like, it's paper. Paper writes it to him.
Yeah, and you're like, oh wow, that's a...
It's like, I don't like cats. It's like, okay, and then we move on to the graveyard that Yajiro found a while ago. Graveyard of Dragons. And Wendy uses her new magic Milky Way to summon the soul of a dragon named Zirconis. Also known as the Emerald Dragon. Who's Zirconis?
Yes.
Named as the Emerald Dragon. He repeats that, trust me, he repeats that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ask him about what the heck happened to the dragons, and they learn the story about the dragons about 400 years ago, why all of them are dead, and how there was some sort of rebellion between dragons that supported humans and dragons that were against humans.
Mm-hmm.
And then turns out the leader was Igneo of the rebellion.
Mm. Yeah.
And then they find out that the reason that the majority of the dragons actually died was because one of the humans already killed the dragons after the dragons granted them magic to slay the dragons. And that human was dun-dun-dun, Acnologia.
Oh.
He slaughtered dragons like turkey hunting season. And yes. Then, yeah, after that, after they find out, they meet Arcadios, the guy with the broccoli hair guy. Mm. And turns out he's not really a bad guy, despite saying Zarev. Zarev.
Yeah, it turns out he's actually on the side of the good guys, which is like, wait a minute.
This guy was like, he held his evil face, Zarev. Soon, Zarev. Zarev. Soon, Zarev. Like, what?
That was weird. That was deliberately misleading, but not very in a way that makes sense, you know?
Very misleading. I'm going to call him Mr. Misleading Guy from now on. Anyways,
sure.
Mr. Misleading. So they go Mr. Misleading, and learn that there's this so-called eclipse magic gate thing that they have to use to travel to the past to kill Zareth and save the world before it was doomed. And it turned out that it's going to open on July 7th, year 777. So many seven.
Yes, this is meaningful.
Yeah, very meaningful, because for those who read Rave, you know what that means. Anyways, they get kicked out. Yeah, they get kicked out because the minister dude was like, you can't change the past, you change the past, you'll screw everything up. Like, that's kind of true. That's really true. Even though you do want to preserve the future, you can't change the past because you'll screw the future up. You do something wrong, like step on a bug, and then all of a sudden, the human race.
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, so then Lucy gets captured because they need a celestial mage to power the eclipse magic gate thing. And Yukino was there too, and she gets captured because, hey, we want to make sure that nobody can power that thing up.
Yes, because there are no other celestial spirit mages in the world.
Well, there was one, but then she died like some years ago.
two, actually. Don't forget, wait. Angel was a celestial spirit mage.
Oh, yes. So there's four total, so five.
Five, yeah, if you count Lucy's mom.
Yeah. So two are dead.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, and, so, yeah, they get captured, fairy tale guys get kicked out because, like, we don't want you, but we can't keep you because there'll be trouble, and the king likes you guys, so if you want your friend back, you just win, and we'll give her back. Like, yeah, okay, so they go back.
Yeah.
and then they come up with a plan to win the game, the final match of the game, and also rescue Lucy, so they split up.
Mm.
Not to Wendy, Mir Jingle, and the three cats go to rescue Lucy while the others, consisting of Gaju, Laxus, Urza, Gray, and Dubia, will take on, will be on the Battle Royale with the other guilds.
Mm-hmm.
And, so disguises, when they try to get into the castle. Mary Jane's hockey mask. Not suspicious at all.
Yeah, that's, indeed.
Okay. And then, funny enough, it's a pretty badass way to start. It's like with the Battle Royale, pretty much they have to go around and beat each other up. And if you beat the captain, you get more points than the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you beat the captain, they get eliminated total, right? The team gets eliminated also if they beat the captain or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
So then all the teams go off, and then for some reason Fairy Tail just stands around and is like, what are they doing? And Mavis is like, this is my plan. Strategy! And then, so it turns out Mavis is, see the strategist. That's no wonder. No wonder. And then we get to see the princess of Fjord.
Mm-hmm.
What's her middle name? Something.
I don't know.
Whatever, yeah. So, something about her, like, can't tell if she's good or not.
Yeah, it is kind of, she's being a little bit ambiguous, but after, after what's-his-face, I'm kind of like, I'm not trusting you with your ambiguity.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So then while Fairy Tail's just standing around waiting for the right moment, because that's what their plan was, to wait and like just play out the battles in their mind of who they run across and all that, and how they win. Mm. You know, mental battles. Mm-hmm. And then all these girls are kicking each other's butts and stuff. And then one of the girls gets knocked out completely because, you know, they get knocked out completely. And then finally, Fairy Tail starts bursting into action. Gray fights against Rufus, kicks his butt, actually finds a weak point in his memory maze, kicks his butt. And then we move back to the other team, the other group, who are going to rescue Lucy. And they save her, which was too easy. Mm-hmm. And then they come down to the so-called pitfall of hell or something. And then they meet these executioner guys who are going to kill them.
Yeah, they are totally going to be relevant and meaningful beyond these next few battles.
Yes.
Totally.
Although that one fish guy is kind of interesting.
He is a bit weird, yeah. Also, okay. I am a little bit amused by how the Princess Hisui is wearing basically a mini skirt. And I'm just like, huh, yeah, that's totally what I think of when I think of royalty. It's like, how regal. Damn regal legs.
And wear mini skirts.
Yeah, that's totally what nobility wore. Or at least, well, they wear them now. But
This is what Mashima's princesses wear.
Yeah, don't ever let him be in charge of the Disney princesses line, please.
Never do that. But it'll be good. It'll be good art. But the problem is, it would not be good for the kids.
No, not so. Why not really.
Princess dress. So don't watch this. You don't have to watch this anymore.
He's like, no.
That is bad.
Yeah. All right. It's the end. Yeah. So, where do we end this volume off?
It was all right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically everyone kind of pairs off against these guys. I do kind of agree. It was definitely better than a lot of the previous volumes have been, because we're abandoning, you know, they're now moving past we're only focusing on the tournament. Now we're focusing not only on other things, you know, they're not just these background events that have been happening, but now the main characters are involved with them and are, you know, moving forward.
True.
So, yeah, I'm definitely interested in, you know, I definitely like this a lot better than the past several volumes, I must say.
Personally, I would like it if a series started a tournament, but then quit halfway because of something big happening. Not like they reach the very near, oh, so find out all of a sudden something big happens. Like, okay.
Yeah, that's kind
of... Oh, I understand, but yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, that's kind of a little bit what's going on here, except, you know, they continue the tournament.
It happens with everything we've read so far. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, they sort of like, here's a tournament, and then suddenly, oh, hey, yeah, here's a reason for not to have the tournament anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's definitely... Yeah,
well, at least they're getting out of the tournament thing.
Yeah, definitely. But at the same time, you know, and the fight between the, you know, the battle royale was plenty of fun to watch. Other than that, I am a little disappointed how we are ending up with a fight against a bunch of well-designed but ultimately pointless characters.
I like the one with the hat.
The hat?
The hat. The female with the hat.
Right. I was about to say, oh, right, that one.
actually, this might be a bit of a spoiler-ish, but, you know, from the Fairy Tail movie, now there's a one female in there who uses paper magic, and I swear, when I didn't realize it until I saw it, until I read this again, I was like, wait, why does she look like that one priestess from the Fairy Tail movie?
Oh, yeah. It's also kind of funny when you look at the the group shot, not the one of them all kind of close up, but the one of them at a bit of a distance, and you're just like, man, she's the second tallest in the group. Also, I love that guy's sort of dual axe things, with the way they've got the hands instead of spikes at the end, and the way he holds them makes the hands do a high five. Like, he better...
I see that.
When we get to him in the anime, especially in the English dub, they better find someone that has the perfect bro voice. Because, like, you know, just this, you know, just this guy with this, you know, mysterious, you know, armor and cloak, which kind of looks kind of really badass, and a mask. But then he just has these, like, axes that are constantly doing high fives. And it's like, come on, you got to get someone with, like, a bro voice.
So then they don't cut. They'll just high five you in the face.
It's like, stop hitting yourself. Stop hitting yourself.
Yeah. Stop high fiving me in the face. No. Stop hitting yourself.
You douchebag. No, but yeah.
Yeah, these are some good designs, though, for the five characters here.
Yeah, for characters that won't matter in the end, but oh well.
Sadly.
Yeah, definitely. Good volume. I liked it. Definitely better than the past several that we've had. All right, it's time to talk about One Piece, volume 13.
You take it away.
Yep, okay. To keep things easy, Zoro continues fighting against the Baroque Works agents, as we learn that they are. And he manages to beat them, but then the, you know, the ranked agents show up and realize, hey, you guys all screwed up, so we're going to kill you. And then the agents that are on Whiskey Peak fight against them, because these guys are like, ah, you know, Miss What's-Her-Face. Her name in the... fake name. Vivi's fake name.
Oh, Miss Wednesday.
There we go, Miss Wednesday. Yeah, turns out that she's actually Nefertari Vivi, the princess of the Kingdom of Alabasta.
She's a princess.
Yep, and... yeah. And Zoro kind of, yeah, manages to drag Luffy, who'd been threatened earlier and is unconscious, manages to drag him out of the way while they're getting involved. And he's like, geez, well, you guys have fun. And runs away. What is that noise in the background?
That's a garbage truck.
Oh, stupid garbage trucks.
I know. Garbage truck doing their garbage truck.
Yeah. Oh, well. But yeah, and then Nami gets involved, and Igaram, the leader of the town, says, please, you have to protect Vivi. We'll pay you. And then Nami's like, all right, Zoro, let's go. And she managed to convince him because, you know, he still owes her money.
300% interest.
Yep. So they fight. And then they're about to fight Mr. What's-His-Face? Five?
Five.
Yeah, it's Five.
Five.
Yeah, Mr. Five and Miss... what's
Miss Valentine.
Valentine, there we go. She's these stupid names.
But yeah, I like these names.
Yeah, well, they fight them but then Luffy gets involved and the two of them just, you know, start fighting because Luffy thought that Zoro was being a bad guest. And... Mr. Five and Miss Valentine's Day kind of get involved in it, except Luffy and Zoro basically ignore them, and anytime they get involved, they just beat the crap out of them.
And they see Mr. Five and Miss Valentine are trying to kill Vivi, but Luffy and Zoro finally keep getting in their way, and they're like, okay, we're going to kill them first.
Yeah. And then we also get, you know, they manage to beat them, and Nami gets Luffy and Zoro to stop fighting. And then they start, you know, Vivi tells them what's going on exactly, and she basically says, it's like, I can't tell you who is this member of the Seven Warlords that is the leader of Baroque Works that will, if he knows that you know who he is, he will hunt you down. And Nami's like, okay, don't tell us, you know, if he takes, over the whole kingdom, he must be one scary guy. That he is. You're very strong, but you're a match for Sir Crocodile, one of the Seven Warlords of the Sea.
And it's like, oh.
And it's just this moment, like, and Nami's face is amazing. Zoro's just like, you just told us. And then the two
unluckies.
Yeah, the unluckies. They take they like see them, and they know that they know, so they're gonna go tell him. He's like, no way, you know what? They don't know what we look like. So, he's like, I'm leaving. You know, I'm getting away from here. And then the otter of the group draws the pictures as Nami's leaving. Nami's like, wow, you're really good. And, yeah. So, it's just, yeah, bad day. It's a bad day for Nami. But they all decide to leave, and Igaram tells them, okay, go to this place, and I'll distract them. And then he blows up. And then it turns out that Miss... All Sunday was the one that killed him, and she is the partner of Crocodile, the boss, and she has some kind of mysterious power that allows her to knock weapons out of hands and throw people over railings without ever touching them. Dun dun dun. And her.
Oh yeah, Miss All Sunday.
Yep, and she's wearing a cowboy hat and a very skimpy cowboy outfit.
Well, that's how she dresses.
Yep, indeed. And yeah, so she gives them, you know, she lets them know, is like, hey, the log post is taking you to Little Garden. You go there, we won't have to worry about killing you. So, you know, I'll give you this pose all the way to, you know, all the way to Alabasta. But of course, Luffy says she doesn't decide our course. And they make their way to Little Garden, where they discover dinosaurs and two Viking giants.
Viking giants!
They're pretty badass. And it turns out that the two of them have been fighting for years, and they always fight whenever the volcano goes off. And they have no idea why they, you know, why they're fighting anymore. I kind of like to imagine that if one time the volcano went off right after they finished fighting one time. So, like, the fight, they're completely beat up, and they're like, oh, we're done. And then the volcano goes off again. They're like, oh...
Like, let's fight again. Like, I don't remember what we're fighting. What are we fighting for again? I don't remember. Let's just fight.
Yeah. And yet they... Yeah, they do a pretty bad A fight. Pretty much manage to blast, you know, break each other's weapons pretty well. Or not break them, but, you know, they're not doing much. And then... Yeah, when one of the giants, Dory, it's the two giants, Brogy and Dory, and Dory is the one that Luffy and Vivi are with, he drinks some ale and it blows up inside his stomach. And he's like, who did this? He's like, you know, Brogy would never do this, so the only other people here are you. You must have done this, and he's about to fight Luffy.
And Luffy's like, pissed.
Or actually, you know, actually he's... he is pretty much as like Luffy's like, you know what, I'm gonna shut you up. And so, yeah, that ends the volume. And yeah, this is, yeah, we're really getting into one of the most remembered parts of One Piece. Just like these early parts, I mean, granted, this is one of the parts that I remember the most from One Piece, mostly because this is the part that the anime that was being aired back home kept re-airing, it was starting from the beginning.
I like Little Garden.
Yeah, so I had a lot of chances to watch it, and this definitely, yeah, rereading it this time, I'm just like, oh, yeah, there's a reason this is good. I like this.
Hey, so, good.
Yes, quite good. It is, yeah, I mean, that's the thing about One Piece, man. There is so much content, even though we kind of go from one place to the second place in one volume, which... But still, there is so much content here. It's just so much fun. I love it.
So much content, yet the current one has so much more, because, like, double, triple the content that it originally used to have. Like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, it's definitely something, all right. But, yeah, the giants and everything, just, you know, we're just being introduced to all the weird, strange stuff that this series is about. Again, you know, but this time we're sort of like, oh, freaking giants. That's pretty awesome.
All right.
And dinosaurs. So, yep, definitely a great one. What do we think of this volume?
I liked it. I really liked it. Mm-hmm. Not as much as the next one, but I liked it.
Yeah, it's definitely good. We're also introduced to Mr. Three and his partner, who will be... major troublemakers here, but yeah, let's get into that. Volume 14. Mo, you want to do a quick recap?
All right, so afterwards, we left off from when Dory suspected Luffy and his crew for tampering with the ale. But Luffy's like really pissed and pretty much said that he's gonna find the real culprit. And man, mm-hmm. Trust me, when I read that part, I was like, man, I feel the same way Luffy. Like, dude, whoever did that has no right. Damn. So despite that, the volcano goes off again, and they try and stop Dory from going off, but he goes off, and he and Brogy fight, and Brogy knows that something's wrong. Brogy knows something's wrong, but asks Dory will run. Dory says, "I'm fine. It's fine." Okay. And they fight, and then Brogy beats him, obviously. And then while Brogy's all celebrating, this tree appears, and he's like, aha! It was a trap. It was a trap. And then he points out that the two had a 100-year-old bounty on them, a long-time bounty on them. And that's why he sprang that trap, to get them both. And then and Usopp kind of gets this little bit of, you know, oh, this is what I want to be. Well, no, that was a while ago, but yeah, at the same time, Luffy and Usopp are both pissed. But Luffy's more pissed because, you know, you don't tamper in a battle of honor among men. And guess who are back? Mr. Fine, Mrs. Valentine. Apparently, they're sore losers, but they don't want to give up. And then we get to see Mr. Three's power is a candle. He's a candle man. And he manages to overwhelm all the Straw Hats minus Luffy, Sanji, and Usopp. Well, Luffy comes in later, but and so is Usopp, but Sanji's nowhere to be seen. And then, so some funny candle moments of, yeah. And then Luffy comes to rescue. And then we'd see his partner, Miss Golden Week, actually do her thing. And then when Luffy frees the others, they take out Mr. Five and his partner. And then Luffy chases Mr. Three, beats him up. And then the volume ends with Sanji finding Mr. Three's hideout on Little Garden.
Mm-hmm.
And the snail phone. Is it called the snail phone? What's it really called again?
Oh, it's the Denden-mushi.
Denden-mushi, yeah. The Denden-mushi rings, and then Sanji answers it, and it's like, oh, well, welcome to the crappy restaurant. How may I help you? It's like, hey, stop joking. Don't you realize who this is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of? As it turns out, it was Mr. Zero.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Sanji's like, Mr. Zero.
This volume definitely has some of my most remembered parts of One Piece, particularly the fight with Nami, Vivi, and Zoro being stuck in the wax, being turned into wax figures, Luffy is, like, you know, trying to save them, but at the same time he's constantly, you know, giving that, you know, getting caught by the color traps. And I just remember that moment where it's Nami telling him, he's like, come on, free us. And he just, like, with his dead look on his face, is just like, I don't want to save you. I remember when I first watched that time, I was like, holy shit. It's like, what is going on here?
And then it turns out the color trap.
Yeah, and then, of course, you have Nami's reaction where it's just like, yeah, you're just like exactly how you feel. You're like, what are you saying? And it turns out, and then it goes comedic. But that was a really dramatic moment where it was just like Luffy was like, I don't want to save you. I'm not interested in saving you. And, yeah, and of course we've got Zoro, who is saying, is like, you know what? If I cut off my legs, I can get free and crush these guys. And he's about to do it and actually, you know, cuts his legs, or at least starts to cut his legs. And if you notice in the this volume beyond, he always has stitches around his ankles.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't see how far he cut, but they seem to extend all around the back of his legs. Well, you know, you see that he's bleeding and everything, but you don't see exactly how seriously or deep he managed to cut. But do keep in mind, those stitches go around his entire ankle.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just like, oh, jeez.
He was serious, and basically Nami's like, wait, you're going to use it to escape? I didn't say I was going to escape, I said I was going to kick their ass.
Yeah.
So how are you going to escape then? I don't know, I'm going to kick their ass first.
and it also kind of reminds me of, you know, what Kuros did to escape, and it just seems like that's the common theme for swordsmen, for badass swordsmen, where, you know, you're trapped somewhere by your legs, so cut it off and kick some ass.
Jiki, I'll cut both my legs and attach my swords to them.
Booyah. I also love that with Zoro, where he's like, you know what, if I'm going to be a statue, I want a cool pose. And Nami and Vivi are like, you idiot. This isn't time to be playing. And yeah.
And Zoro's like, well, I'm not playing. I'm serious about this.
He's like, yeah, it's like, if I'm going to be a statue, I want to look cool. And yeah, and then, of course, there was always that, they set the wax on fire. It's like, how did they survive that? Like, really?
Well, yeah, they all survived it, and somehow Nami
loses her shirt, but not her top, her bra. It's like, how does that work? And Vivi still has her shirt on. Both of her shirts. It's like, you know, I bet Nami's shirt didn't even burn. She was just like, eh, whatever. It's a good excuse to get topless.
Also, Luffy lost his shirt too. Best.
OTP. OTP. Yeah, that this moment brought to you by the Shipper Mindset.
Fan service.
Yep. And yeah, so, and then of course we also, let's see, did we also get, no, we don't have that reveal yet, but yeah, so yeah, this definitely counts as one of my favorite volumes of One Piece, just because it's, you know, it has some of the best moments, especially early on in the series, and so yeah, I'm definitely, and these are some of the moments that I remember the most from the anime. You know, when I was watching it for the first time, before I was really into One Piece. And these are kind of some of the moments where I was like, oh, yes, this is awesome. You know?
Yep.
And so, okay then, do you have anything to add about it?
I really like this volume.
Mm-hmm. Want to elaborate on that?
Oh, well, with the fight against Mr. Three and Miss Golden League generally. And also before then, when Luffy was like, I'm going to find a guy who did this. And I'm like, oh, man, I wish we could just beat him and Supreme some more. He deserved it. Bastard. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Also, the fan service, the mild fan service.
Oh, yeah, that.
And Zoro being awesome, like, I'm going to cut my legs and kick the ass.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, what are you going to do about escaping? I didn't see if I was going to escape.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, then. And, okay, so let's go into volume 15.
All right. Now, this one I like, too.
Yeah, we've got Brogy is all crying because Dory is, you know, dead. But then, yeah, the great reveal where Dory is still alive, but he passed out. And, you know, their weapons, he's like, wait, how are you still alive? He's like, oh, the weapons, our weapons are so crappy. Because they've been... You know, we've been using them for 100 years. So this was one of those times where where someone surviving in One Piece actually made sense. Yeah. You know, you're still like, I'm pretty sure that a hit from an axe, even a damaged axe, would still hurt you. But still, that if, you know, it was wearing, like, protection there, that could, you know, keep him pretty safe if, you know, it was a lousy weapon. But yeah, and they're all happy. It's like, oh, it's like, thank goodness you're alive. And it's like, ow, you hit my wound. It's like, you looking for a fight? And yeah, and you've got Sanji talking to Mr. Zero. And then the Unluckies come after him, and he beats them up. And Mr. Zero is like, hey, wait a minute. There were still some Straw Hats alive? You said the mission was accomplished. You know, I thought that, but they weren't dead as I thought. It's like, you lied to me. And so, since he thinks it's Mr. Three, Crocodile's like, oh, okay. Miss
Sanji. Sanji could have said, oh, some wild animals attacked me. Oh, okay. And he wouldn't, he would just say, oh, okay, fine.
Whatever. Yeah. Well, it's not like he cares. Yeah. True. So, Mr. Zero sends Miss All Sunday to dispose of Mr. Three. And then we continue onward. We get the Marines, Tashigi and Smoker, have captured one of the Baroque Works agents and are intercepting some transmissions and are on their way to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
And then Luffy, and then Luffy and group are leaving. And yeah, you kind of have this, you know, they realize, oh, hey, yeah, there's a giant land-eater fish. So, you know what, let's help you get through this. And they destroy it and go, and Luffy and crew go through and...
Wait, they destroy it? I thought they actually helped him get past it.
Well, yeah, they helped him get past it by blowing a freaking hole through it.
Oh!
That's why Luffy and crew were just, like, you know, going in its mouth and they get knocked all the way through.
Oh, okay. And then
we get a little bit of a flashback where we discover that, you know, Brogy and Dory were like bragging about how they killed, you know,
the biggest
Yeah. And we killed these sea kings, and like, we're great. And then this little human girl was like, which one's bigger? And then they ended up, you know, putting it side by side. And they ended up fighting over which one was bigger. And you see the skeletons of those sea kings are still there. And, you know.
And then you're like, oh, that devious girl.
And they keep, you know, they keep fighting. But it turns out that this girl managed to save everyone because she kept those two pirates from being, pirating. By, you know, keeping them involved in this eternal conflict, basically.
That's funny.
And then Nami gets sick.
Oh, yeah, that's a big one.
Yep, and you kind of have this moment where everyone's panicking and all the guys are like, oh, hey. And it's like, what's it like to be sick? I don't know. Like, I've never been sick.
What kind of guys are you?
Yeah, and Nami is, and, you know, they're saying, we need to get a doctor for Nami, and Nami's like, oh, no, there's, you know, I have this newspaper that I'd hidden from you, V, because I didn't want you to worry, but, you know, the civil war in Alabasta is getting worse. And Nami is all, but Vivi is always like, you know what? Doesn't matter. We need to help you. You know, we need to get you taken care of first.
You can't get there faster unless you're better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I kind of imagine Luffy would have been like, yeah, even if you had to decide it otherwise, I still would have gone and gotten a doctor for Nami.
Just grab away. Mm-hmm. You cure her. What do you mean?
Yep.
Cure her now.
It's like, wait, what?
Yeah. Cure her, I'll give you. If you cure her, I'll give you meat. I want the money, not meat. I'll give you meat. That's it.
Oh, yeah. And then as they're traveling, it starts snowing, and they run across some dude standing in the water. But then it turns out
that was the best. That was one of the best parts. Ever.
Yeah. Then it turns out we meet the underwater ship of
Wapol,
the pirate.
Wait, is it Wapo or Wapo? I mean, I know the dub too. Okay, because that's because, you know, German with W, V, you know.
Well, yeah. But yeah, he basically is a guy that's eaten the munch fruit. And he can eat anything. Literally anything. And it's kind of freaky.
Starts eating the ship.
Yep.
He's like, delicious. Yeah. I want some more.
Yeah. Luffy's like, stop that. And they beat him up and send him flying. And so they keep going until they get to Drum Island.
I just realized Vopple is like a mix of Kirby and King DDD with lots of flying.
That's pretty much terrifying. Yeah. That is kind of terrifying. But yeah, you have the people of Drum Island are like, no, go away, pirates, because they've just recently been invaded by pirates. But Vivi does the diplomatic thing, is like, please help us, and then Luffy follows her lead.
And he learns a valuable lesson as a captain.
Yep, so they're going to help them. So they take Nami with them. And this is another part that I really, you know, that I really like, was where you had, you know, basically, oh, what's his face again?
Dalton,
yes. I should remember that. The Dalton brothers, yes. But he tells them that the only doctor on the island left after their king disappeared is this one crazy doctor who lives on the top of a mountain. And Luffy basically wakes Nami up and tells her, hey, the only doctor around here lives on top of a mountain, so we're going to climb it. And everyone else just freaks out. It's like, yeah, no, this is ridiculous. This is, you know, this isn't safe. But Nami is like, you know what? Hey, I'm counting on you, Captain. And, you know, agrees to go along with it. And you kind of had it. Yeah, I don't know who says it, but I think it's Luffy, but Usopp, who's like, you know what, I've had it with our captain and with our navigator.
You're crazy.
Yeah. You know, and I think this scene was one of those ones where people that were reading or watching One Piece for the first time probably started shipping the two of them together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because, like, you know, they're both crazy and they kind of get each other. So, yeah. Not saying it's something that I actively do now, but at the time when I first read it, I was like, oh, hey, that's cool. That's
actively.
A cool character scene.
Well, I don't do it actively anymore.
Yeah, well, and then, yeah, Nami, Luffy carries Nami while Sanji goes along to basically protect them. And, yeah, also worth pointing, Dalton says that the pirates that, you know, pirates attacked them, there were only 5 pirates, and the captain called himself Blackbeard. And so, at the time when you're reading that, you're like, oh, hey, like the real pirate Blackbeard, but also, this is important. Very important. The fact this Blackbeard person, as we will later find out, And so we basically end up with Luffy and Sanji going, trying to get Nami up the mountain, and they get attacked by giant
rabbit polar bear thingy.
Yeah, giant carnivorous rabbits. And yeah, so they fight them, but Walpole is starting to take back his kingdom, and we have Kureha, who isn't up there. She's actually downs, you know, helping people.
She's in a nearby town that they just left.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they, yeah, you have Dalton tries to fight Walpole, but gets shot full of arrows.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an avalanche. That the,
also, Dalton is he's a devil fruit user of the
He turns into a giant bull.
Bison.
Bison bull, sure.
Bull bison.
Yeah.
Bison.
Yep, M bison.
Bison. No.
Yeah, and so yeah, this was another volume that I really liked, just because it had, you know, a lot of focus on some really good stuff that I definitely enjoy.
This is actually between this and Skypiea, I guess they're the tie right now, because this is actually one of your arcs from the grandma before the new world.
Yeah, definitely. And I definitely enjoyed this as far as, you know, just with the everyone. The moments between the characters were kind of what I really liked, and that's what really sold me on. This, you know, sold me more so on the story, seeing how seeing all the characters interact and all the small moments. And I may have been misguided in my youth, but I did ship it. So.
But it's a winter island. How can you not like Winter Island?
That too. I want to go to a winter island.
I don't want to go to Winter Island. I would die.
Wuss. But, yeah. Hey. All right. You got anything else to add about this one?
Actually, there was something interesting that I caught when Luffy and Sanji were talking about something about snow, and how Luffy, as he said, oh, you know, people in this place, they don't sleep at all. I'm like, wait, Luffy, how do you know that? And Sanji didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wait. And then Luffy said, oh, someone from my village told me. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
That
of course. I mean, you know, but that was weird. And all of a sudden, Sanji's like, oh, did you know that girls in the winter town have very smooth skin? And I'm like,
mm-hmm.
What? and somehow even Luffy kind of knew that in some way. Well, he didn't know that, but he kind of knew something similar. He was like, oh, it's like when people rub up against each other to keep warm. I'm like, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So when I thought, I was like, you know, I'll think about something Oda will have to try and get away from a certain question concerning a character's attraction to another character. And I was like, yeah, I can see what he was trying to avoid.
Yeah, pretty much. But all right, then. I think we're pretty much finished up here with discussing One Piece. So, all right, next episode. We will be talking about a new, brand new release, The Seven Deadly Sins, Volume 1, which we've talked about before, and we've talked about the manga as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, we're going to go back and start reviewing each new volume as it comes out. We will also be covering One Piece Volumes 16, 17, and 18. And
so we're going to finish the drum arc and
go into Alabasta.
Alabasta.
Yeah.
Alabasta, sorry.
And yeah, the further I get along, the more I realize that I've got some holes in my collection that need filling, so I should probably do those.
I am working on getting a job right now.
Mm-hmm. That way you can have money to fill the holes in your collection.
Yes.
Yep. All right. Well, yep. Like I said, next week, Seven Deadly Sins, Volume 1, One Piece, Volume 16, 17, and 18. And then the week after that, depending on what comes out. Let's see. Double check. Genshin Season 2. We'll probably have a Fairy Tail volume the week after that or something. But, yeah, I think, yeah, Fairy Tail comes out on the 15th of this month. So, yeah, next week, that will be before we record for next week. But the week after that, we'll have fairy tale, most likely. Or if fairy tale isn't out by then, we'll finally go over the run 1/2 omnibus. Let's see, what else is there that we were covering? Okay, yeah, Nisekoi. Let's see, when's that out? Amazon, let's see.
That's next month.
Yeah, I know. I'm just double checking because this month will be over soon. Quickly.
Let's see. Just started.
Well, yeah, but you know how it is. Months end soon.
Don't say that. That's scaring me. I don't want to get any older than I am already.
All right, let's see. Yeah, Fairy Tail on the 15th. Genshin. What other ones did we have? Oh, yeah. Let's double check for Ranma 1/2. All right, let's see. Genshin's second season. No, I've got volume. Okay, so there's volume 4. And let's see, when's volume 5 coming out? Oh, jeez, it's gonna make me actually the second season. Genshin, let me try that again. Second season, there we go. Second season 5. When is that one scheduled? For September. Okay, we ignore that one. Nisekoi, we've got volume 3 already that we went through. Oh, no, wait, no, we went through volume 2. Volume 3 is in May. Okay. Ranma 1/2. What do we have there? Do a little bit of just planning ahead while we're at it. Let's see. Volume 1, 2, and 1. Okay, and then volume 2, volumes 3 and 4 is what it contains, is in May. So, yeah, so we have time. So, yeah, Seven Deadly Sins and One Piece volumes 16, 17, and 18. And then on, let's see, so that's for this coming week. Then Fairy Tail comes out on the 15th, which is not this coming week, but rather the following week. So we'll probably go over Ranma 1/2, the first two volumes first. And then the week after Fairy Tail comes out, we'll talk about it, since, you know, to give us time to read it. And this also, you know, and also don't forget that we will, continue. We will also continue to read 3 volumes of One Piece every week as well. So, all right then, that is that. So, all right, let's go ahead and move on to the next segment. It's time for us to talk about the weekly Shonen Jump chapters for this week. And we are starting off with Seraph of the End, chapter
14.
Is it, where does it say that?
This is 14.
I know, but where in the chapter does it say that? It's like several pages in.
It says on the first page, you fool.
Oh, there it is.
Color page.
The color page. I ignored it. That page makes me uncomfortable, okay?
Why? Is it because of the female?
You mean the androgynous thing that looks like a child but is actually a demon, and yet a continuation of manga author's obsession with drawing things that look like children but are actually thousands of years old? It could probably have something to do with that. Anyway, talking about the actual
chapter. But it's still not as bad as the lolly one, the lolly vampire. That's just so cliche, it irritates me.
Well, yeah, I'm already have these questions about the authors of this, but anyway, talking about the actual chapter. So Yuichiro almost does what we all had hoped for, and
what you had hoped for.
Yeah, starts to murder Shinoa, but then I can tell I'm not gonna like Michaela, because he saves her, but he doesn't do it for her, but he does it because.
He doesn't want Yuichiro to kill people.
Yeah, it seems kind of odd that the Gurren's main secret weapon is one that decides it wants to kill humans instead of vampires. That seems like the exact opposite of what you're trying to do, you know? But this is kind of weird, because you know that whole cliche of, you know, the main character's going on a rampage, but his love interest hugs him to help him calm down. There's a bit of a twist on that old trope here, where Gurren actually orders Shinoa to hug you, because he's like, that will bring him back from what he's become. It's like, it looks like Gurren is a is very well versed in the art of tropes, and it actually works. But I'm not sure why it would work, because normally the idea is it works because, you know, the person is willing to care so much about the main character that they're willing to put themselves in harm's way for all that, you know, and their feelings come across and calm the raging beast, etc., and all that. Except that's not exactly what happens here. It's more, she was ordered to do it, so, okay. But yeah, we end up, ends up turning out that the demon army actually has the upper hand now, as the, Lieutenant General Kurito Hiragi comes in.
I hate that guy.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. He looks kind of like that, you know, the typical sort of serious kind of character, but then it turns out that, you know, he's kind of an arrogant asshole. So, I misjudged his character.
Okay, do you remember when Gurren's lower subordinates were introduced and you were complaining about how they were, like, non-military. You know, bickering each other and stuff?
Yeah.
It's like, is that really how a military acts? And I'm looking and I saw this guy appear, and I'm like, yeah, this is exactly why.
Yeah, I think part of it's slightly justified in that it's not so much a military as the way we think of it, with, you know, professionals that behave in a professional manner. Rather, it's a military that's based around a family system, you know, with, like, this is the head family and these are the lower families or whatnot. You know, it's like, it's less a modern army and more like a medieval feudal army, or, you know.
So, like the Hyuga from Naruto?
Sort of like that.
That's the only example I can think of so far.
Well, I was thinking more real-world examples, like actual medieval armies and the way they kind of weren't a professional army as much as they were a bunch of thugs being commanded by a bunch of bunch of arrogant inbred nobles, and you kind of get that across all the world. Medieval Europe, you had it in, you had that in the feudal Japan as well, which I think is kind of what they're going off of. Maybe a little bit of a World War II sort of feel in how the Imperial Japanese Army during that time was they were all kind of just a little bit arrogant from what I've read.
So the Hiragi family are like the higher ups of the, are like basically the
pretty much.
Yeah.
Although I'm not entirely sure what the basis they have for being high, you know, for being lording over other humans, but I guess that's something we'll get into. So Mika ends up retreating with the other vampires, but because, you know, he sees that Yu is with the other humans, which I'm like, well, why wouldn't he be?
There's some sort of secret when he said, that's my secret, when Crowley asks him,
yeah,
what did you wish to do? And he's like, that's my secret until the next time.
Yeah. And I kind of like Crowley. He's a complete bastard, but at the same time, he, you know, he kind of has these moments where Mika is going on, was like, I hate vampires and I hate humans, and Crowley is like, okay, that's quite enough of that. He's like, now shut your mouth like a good boy. He's like, you're an amoral douchebag, but you're entertaining. But yeah, and why did I forget her name again?
Who? Shinoa?
That's it, yes, Shinoa. Dang it.
Did you hate her?
Well, yeah, there you go. That's totally why. No, but yeah, she tells Gurren that he's going to ask him a question, and he's like, nah, not answering. So they all take him, you know, home, and Shinoa goes down into the secret labs and reveals that she is a member of the Hiragi family. Mm-hmm. And one of the soldiers asks, why are you in the meager rank of sergeant? And she just basically says, I have no interest in the power struggles. So I lost my older sister to that, after all. And so she goes in, talks to Gurren, and basically says that the the drug that she had you take basically was, you know, she was ordered to give it to him because it's, you know, a unique supplement different from the others. And yeah, Gurren is basically like, I am a complete douchebag. And he's like, oh, the sacrifices must be made, etc. And I'm like, okay. And yeah, although he does make the assumption is like, oh, why are you spouting this idealistic crap at me? Is like, what, are you falling in love with him? And of course she says no, but you know, it's the total
denial.
Yeah, it's the total no, I don't. When what they actually mean is yes, I do. And yeah, and so she kind of goes to his, you know, his hospital room, and she's like, please wake up. And she's like, me in love, never. And then she does the blush that denies her words. He's like, but wake up soon, Yuichiro, please. I'm just like, okay. Stop trying to make me care about this. It's not going to work.
Well, it works for me opposite of you.
Oh, you fool. Anyway, this is a crappy manga.
So her sister is the inventor of the cursed gear.
Yes, indeed, and that's basically what caused her death, it seems like.
Kind of funny, because that kind of reminded me of this one series. A series I despise, called Freezing, where the main character's older sister
didn't
invent such a thing, but she was like the most powerful, but she died, and her sacrifice allowed the others to have a chance of fighting the, I think, Novas or something they were called?
Whatever they were, the monsters of the week.
Yes, Monsters of the
Week. Yeah, screw that series, by the way.
Yeah,
that's another one I refuse to read.
I hate that series for a different reason than what you hate it for.
I think my reason for hating it for the creepy, semi-incestuous rape in the one of the main characters' backstories is probably a good reason to hate it.
Oh, yes, that one, yeah. Mm-hmm. That one.
Also, the... Also, the exploitative nudity, which is kind of weird. It's like, are we really exploiting someone if it's just a bunch of drawings? But still, it feels skeezy, so rather not.
Well, it's seinen, you know how seinen people are.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. Fortunately, not all of them, but sometimes, yeah, they get a little... All right, then. Let's talk about One Piece, Chapter 742, Ever at Your Side. And we've got the cover page with Robin reads a story to napping alpacas. And
I could have sworn we've seen alpacas before.
Possibly. But I don't know. I can't remember.
It was Usopp. No, those giraffes. No, that's Sanji with giraffes. I can't remember, but I know I saw alpaca before.
I don't know. I don't think Sanji was giraffes. Usopp was drawing the spots on them, remember?
Oh. Okay. See, numbers.
Indeed, yeah. Well, let's talk about the chapter itself. We're continuing in the flashback where you get Kuros, undefeated gladiator, ends up being convinced by King Riku. Is like, hey, look, you know, we just fought here. You didn't kill me, so you're not a complete beast. So how about you not be in this cage anymore? And he becomes captain of the Dressrosa Riku Royal Army. And all the ladies, they love him, except for one, the Princess Scarlet, who is at the time 16 years old. She's 6 years older than her younger sister, Viola.
And he's 9 years younger than Kuros, by the way. Mm-hmm.
Yep, Kuros at the time is 25, which, well, I don't know. I guess it's statute of limitations. Laws in Japan are different. So, yeah, if this were written in America, she'd probably be 18 around at that time. But anyway, she's always like, oh, I know you're still a bad guy. I'm not going to trust you. Don't you ever touch me or my sister. And he's like, but I'm supposed to protect you. She's like, no, thank you. And then she gets abducted by pirates. But then Kuros saves her, wrecking an entire ship, and she realizes, oh, I was wrong about him, and she, especially after he's like, oh, forgive me, I didn't mean to touch you while I was saving your life, and, yeah, she just goes like, oh, he's actually not such a bad guy, and then she's becomes very fond of him, to the point where she's being all domestic with him, and, you know, like, making food for him, they're hanging out on you know, hanging out on a swing, and then next to a swing, sitting next to each other. And then King Riku was like, all totally caught. It was like, you know what? You've fallen in love with my sister, with my daughter, haven't you? And he's like, yeah, you know what? I'm cool with it, but you know, there are still going to be a lot of people that would not forgive your prior history, so there's no way they'd allow it. And then I just love this transition where Scarlett is like, I'd rather die than be without him. And then it's like her funeral.
It's like, wait, that gives me a good idea, daughter. It's yeah. Like, wait.
Yeah, the first time, yeah, my first reaction when I first read that was, wait, where did Rebecca come from then? But that was only a fraction of a second, because immediately afterwards, you know, it's basically Scarlett is pretending to be dead. They're living out in the fields outside of the city. And then Rebecca is born. And we kind of had this scene that kind of caught me off guard at first, because it's, you know, sort of like the camera's right behind baby Rebecca's head. You can see everyone looking down on her. You see Kiro, Scarlett, King Riku, Viola. And then you see another woman who looks a lot like Viola does now, and I was like, wait, who's this?
Probably the mother.
Probably, but it's never specifically said. It's just randomly grandma is there, and I have no idea. It's like, I'm just like, wait, who are you?
I like how the men are crying. like, oh, my daughter. Oh, my daughter.
It's pretty amazing. Touching. And, you know, Kiros has this kind of like hold up where he's like, I can't touch her. She's so pure and innocent, and I have dirty hands, and I shall not sully her. And then she's like, she's your Scarlett is like, she's your daughter. And I'm kind of thinking, is like, trust me, you've done a lot more with those dirty hands of yours. That's how you got a daughter in the first place.
And those hands, I wonder. Wait, you can't put those hands.
He gets around it by putting gloves on every time he touches her, which I'm like, man, you gotta do something about that mental hang-up, man, but oh well. Yeah, and then we cut forward to the time when Doflamingo took over, and Kiros tells them, okay, I need to go to the castle, but, you know, if you...
Oh, notice that there's a shackle on his leg, on one leg of his.
Not in that part.
Not yet?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's after he gets to the palace, but... Yeah, you have, he basically tells his family, okay, look, if you run into any danger, wait for me at Red Flower Field, I'll come back for you. And, you know, it's kind of a little bit similar to the flashback scene that we had with Rebecca when she remembered, you know, right before her mother died. Except this time, you know, you have Kiros in there because this is his memory and he remembers darn well being there. And then we go, he has the shackle, he's got the... Although it's interesting, worth pointing out that, you know, it was a sea prism stone cuff, and he's saying, like, I have no power, so you're wondering, why did Doflamingo choose specifically sea prism? But, yeah, and Doflamingo's like, you should join me. He was like, you know, the entire royal family is going to die, which includes your wife and daughter, but still, you know, it'd be cool if you'd join us. And, of course, Kiros does what Zoro almost did, slices off his own leg and is about to kill Doflamingo, but then he gets turned into a toy. And this kind of, you know, answers the question of when did his leg get cut? When did he lose his leg? When he was a human or a toy?
Cut his own leg. Well, let's not forget, she can cut both his legs.
Yeah, and Zoro almost cut his legs off. So it seems like the moment anyone touches a sword, suddenly they're like, I'm going to cut my legs off.
And Zeff cut his leg off screen.
Yeah.
And ate it.
What is it with people cutting or trying to cut their legs off? Although, here's a big question. What's going to happen when he turns back into a human, you know? Because it's like he gets turned to a toy immediately after having cut his leg off. And so you're just kind of thinking, wait. Okay, so as a toy, has that had time to heal? I don't see.
Is his leg still in that prism?
They probably got rid of it.
probably got rid of it. You know, you rotting just, somewhere now.
Yeah, well, it rotted away by now. But, you know, you still kind of have to wonder. If he's a toy, he doesn't have flesh and blood to that can heal. So, you know, what would... when he gets turned back into a human, is he going to bleed out? He's like, turns back into human, and he's just like, oh, crap! I forgot!
Like, I'm a human again. Wait, something is fine. Oh, crap.
He's like, oh, no! He's like, Straw Hat, you must do this. He's like, wait, what? Man, you turned out to be a pussy. But yeah, and, well...
That'd be funny.
Yeah, Akira says the Tin Soldier manages to save Riku, but Riku does not remember him.
Mm.
And then he runs back. He's fighting Doflamingo's forces, and he tries to get back to the Red Flower Field, but then he hears a shot, and it turns out that Scarlet is in town, and she was shot by Steve Tyler. sorry,
Diamante.
Yeah, that guy. he realizes that he has vanished from her mind, so she did not know that he told him to wait for her, so all she knew is that her daughter was hungry, so she came to town. And that ended badly. And this is quite possibly one of the more heartbreaking death scenes in a flashback I have seen here.
For a non-major character.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd say it even rivals some of the main characters. I mean, rivals, not surpasses, but it definitely is up there. Just, you know, the whole, how not only is his wife dying, but she's dying without even remembering who he was and, you know, somehow forgetting how she ended up giving birth to a child. And it's just... this whole, just the, his internal monologue of how, you know, he can't even feel her warmth leaving her dying body. And it's just like, jeez, I'd say it's almost like, must be like watching a loved one die in a dream where you can't fully feel because you are not fully human in the dream. Oh, it's like, you know, it's not really real, but it is actually something that happened. And so you can't fully experience it as a full human being. That's kind of how I'd sort of imagine it. And, yeah, we cut from there where, you know, Toy Soldier is like, is Usulan going to finish in time? And so then we go to the Colosseum, where the Colosseum's about to break. And you have Diamante that reveals, is like, it was I that killed your mother, to Rebecca. And I'm just thinking, we knew that from the flashback, but it just, you know, he hasn't been around long enough for, as a reader, for it to really be this big, no, I killed Mufasa moment, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so
that little panel thing, it was me, and I was like, that's, well, I had a feeling of you.
It's kind of, yeah, well, we saw you do it. But, you know, it's kind of a small panel for that, where it's like, Odo's like, you know, this isn't a big shocking reveal, so I'm not going to treat it as one. And, yeah, and then you got Frankie. He's been beaten pretty bad. And then you've got everyone's like, oh, Usoland, you're fighting. Is like, you can do this. You must save us. And then Usopp got his butt kicked. Like, completely. He tried, but he is toast. And you've got Sugar that says, you can have your poisoned grape back, not realizing that this is not poison at all. But it's Tabasco sauce.
It's super Tabasco for the contatas.
And she makes Usopp eat it. She's like, you eat it and die. And Usopp's swallowing it, and oh my gosh. These last two pages are the freaking weirdest thing Oda has ever drawn. It's just, you've got Usopp's tongue is curling around, his eyes are bulging out and curling around, and it's like something you'd see from like a surrealist artist from the 60s.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah, or something from Ghostbusters. It's just like absolutely freaking horrifying. And of course, his face terrifies Sugar, who does the good old Perona face, or Eneru face, and just completely passes out. And these are just a collection of the freakiest looking faces Oda has ever drawn. And Sugar ends up foaming at the mouth, and she's about to pass out. So we can imagine that next week there will be a lot of pissed off people that are suddenly, that everyone suddenly remembers. So there will be a lot of pissed off everyone. We're like, wait a minute, I remember my boyfriend, and oh crap. Well, hey, new boyfriend, this is going to be awkward. Like, you remember that one toy where it was all, it's like, no, this girl, I'm her boyfriend, and but she's dating someone else now, and you're like, ooh, that's going to be awkward. But let's save it for later, because now we must riot. Doflamingo must pay, now that we realize that, you know, hundreds of our loved ones were wiped from our memories. And, yeah, so what do you think of this ending?
Like, terrifying.
Yeah, well, yeah. But at the same time, I'm just kind of thinking, okay, is this really what we wanted from Usopp when he made his stand? I mean, obviously him winning was unrealistic, but
it's... Didn't one of us call this, like, at some point, or someone we knew that we were talking to called this at some point? I can't remember. Someone called it.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't recall predicting...
Basically, what the Tontatas wanted to do was to make her eat it so she would freak out, but someone else, said something like, oh, what, you know, what if, you know, Usopp does something to, like, scare her, basically.
Might have been said, it's sounding familiar, but I can't remember well enough to take credit for calling something like this.
Even if I did,
I certainly cannot take credit for the most batshit insane art Oda has ever produced. I mean, oh my gosh, I'm turning away from this page. It will haunt me in my nightmares. Okay.
Yeah, you better hope you don't see that in Silent Hill.
Oh gosh. I'd be like, ah, leave me alone.
All of a sudden, you turn the corner and just floating. Usopp, scary, terrifying face. Turn the corner, like,
Usopp, I hate you. All right, let's move on.
Play Silent Hill 4. Don't play Silent Hill 4.
Jeez. Let's move on to World Trigger, Chapter 54. Aftel Krator, which basically they said if they have horns, they're from Aftel Krator, and you know they look like horns, but actually what they are is they are trion receptors that are implanted in the heads of humans, and so to make them more receptive. And if they have black horns, they have a black trigger, and oh hey look, one of them has black horns. Well, they're hosed, and the rest of the chapter is mostly the Azuma squad plus some others fighting one of the, you know, fighting one of the humanoid neighbors who does not have a black trigger, by the way. But he's still a lot more powerful than a regular trigger user because he has the triggers implanted inside, the trion receptors implanted inside him. And he basically wipes the floor with everyone. Mm-hmm. And, well, although you kind of have to wonder, it's like, well, yeah, these guys are the lucky ones. They're not captured. You know, but he just kind of trashes everyone. And that's kind of basically the gist of the chapter. It's showing off how much of a badass one of these guys is. So we can probably expect him to be the weakest one and have all the others be even more badass. So kind of look forward to see where we go with that. But overall, it's mostly an action chapter, but it was a really good action chapter, you know?
Yeah.
Indeed. Ananda, did you have anything specific to say about this one?
It was pretty straightforward, personally, but yeah. I like the idea that, you know, with these, there are different types of ways to actually use the trion.
Indeed, yeah.
Instead of just like, oh, just weapon form or cube form, like, yeah. Oh, we can take it and plant it on our horns and use it.
And I like how there's a reason for the horns, you know, it's not just these guys have horns to make them look demonic.
We like the horn. We're going to look cool with them.
Mm-hmm.
Nah.
Yes, indeed. But yeah, sadly, it was not. The chapter was not about Osamu or Kitora. Thus, I must say it is a substandard chapter.
You didn't like the chapter?
No, I liked it. I just really enjoy Osamu and Kitora when they're sharing a scene together, so I hope they save her quickly because their antics are far too entertaining not to love.
Please, I just hope that she doesn't become the whole, you know, oh, they need to rescue her. But then that's like Machiga because I thought that's who they want. Golden Goose.
Yeah, we'll have to see what they do. I mean, they've already pretty much saved her. They just need to get her out of the cube.
Why don't we save her?
Yeah.
It'll take a while.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, then. It's time for All You Need Is Kill, Chapter 10.
Out.
Yep, where we see Rita, with air quotes, is kind of going through the same problem that Keiji had, where she looks like hell. And she kind of goes through, does a lot of thinking. There's a lot. This is definitely a, I know it's not, it's, you know, it's only drawn by Obata, but it's not written by Oba. But you still kind of get this same general sense of, Obata just really likes working with wordy writers. Because there's a lot of internal dialogue going on here.
Yeah.
As Rita figures out, you know, you've got the horn, that's basically how the mimics are able to do so well, is they have the time loops that the one mimic transmits from his antenna, and so they're able to adjust for, you know, constantly, and, you know, that's how they're able to get to be so powerful, is they're constantly changing the way they fight until they are able to defeat the humans. And she realizes that all those other mimics must be backup units. So she puts together a plan. She destroys the antenna. She kills the mimics, the other mimics, the backup mimics, before destroying the server, the mimic server. And she's able to break the time loop that way. And she stayed alive, but the lieutenant died. And it's kind of in the most ham-fisted foreshadowing ever, where he's going on about how his you know, his wife just had a baby. And I'm just thinking, wow.
Yeah.
Guess who's not surviving this time loop? It's so tragic, except it's so
obvious.
Ham-fisted and cliched that it's devoid of any kind of emotion, really. But, oh well. It does turn out that, you know, Rita actually does tell the military, like, hey, yeah, I've been going through this. And they believe her, and so they're like, oh, okay, so we're going to test your brain and everything and see what's going on. And so she basically becomes like the ultimate soldier because she's being sent everywhere to fight because she can, you know, she has the power of the time loop now. And so she's able to, you know, able to take advantage and learn from all her failures. And then we go cut to the present day again where she is watching Keiji go through the exercises.
Yeah.
Again, and he kind of looks like hell, so this is him after apparently after she first asks him, what loop are you on?
Probably.
So, yeah. So I guess we'll kind of go from here and see what's what with these two. And yeah, this is a good chapter. I mean, it answered a lot of questions, but it was also there was action, but it was relatively action light, while at the same time having a lot of, you know, sort of exposition going on. So suits my tastes quite a lot, but I do think that the lack of a lot of action is a bit of a problem, perhaps, but not that big a problem as long as it does not remain the only thing, you know, the only way the story is told. So, but yeah, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was all right. With the whole, yeah, like you said, so much information about stuff, but at least it's information that's worth knowing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's not like, it's like, oh, hey, look, this random bullshit that I just made up.
And while the whole lieutenant dying was kind of cliche, it's like, oh, look, I have a baby, my newborn son, or whatever. And I'm like, oh, boy, he's not going to make it.
I didn't even clue into it, but then they made it so, at first, but then they made it so ham-fistedly obvious when they, like, left the picture of his baby right next to his dead body. And I'm like, oh, gosh. But, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, talking about shit I just made up, Naruto, chapter 670.
He of the beginning.
Yeah, so we meet the, say, Naruto meets, while unconscious or in his mental mindscape or whatever, meets the Sage of Six Paths, except dude's so old, he talks all archaic and shit.
And Naruto's like, I don't understand what you're saying. Speak more, speak like me, please.
Yeah. And then this was, I have to admit, even though most of the times I say Kishimoto's sense of humor is awful, I kind of did get a bit of a chuckle out of having the sage talk like a complete moron while still having that same serious expression. That was kind of amusing. And then there was a lot of dialogue, and namely the sage finally learning how to talk like a normal person and just telling his story about how his mom was like, yeah, she came and
came from another the moon.
Probably, yeah.
But yeah, she... if you don't know about the story of Kaguya and the bamboo, whatever thing, then...
Yeah, that's the funny thing that Kishimoto has this odd habit of every once in a while pulling concepts from Japanese folklore, like the names of Jiraiya, Tsunade, and Orochimaru come from an existing legend of, you know, in Japanese folklore, and so you're like, oh, you know, it's not a big deal, it's just those are names, but he's kind of like making a reference to that, but then later on you kind of, then you get this, and you're like, oh, now that's just flat out taking the, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
So we find out that she took the fruit, and then, you know, she gave birth to two children, and he, you know, fought the Ten Tails and split it into, or, you know, well, fought it, and then he too had two children, where it's basically you've got the talented one and the one that has to work hard and relies on the help of others to become Kenichi? Powerful. Don't you dare sully that name. No, but basically it's, once again, it's a yes. Even now it is still, it is, but yeah, it's basically the whole, oh hey, the whole Naruto Sasuke rivalry is an eternal ongoing concept, etc., etc. And I'm just like, you know, can you please stop forcing it? You screwed up. Sasuke is an awful character. Don't try to act like it's some ongoing eternal thing or whatever. But, you know, and then we, turns out that his two sons, they fought, and then after the untalented one became more powerful, and, you know, the sage was all like, oh hey, look, he's gonna be the leader, but his older brother was like, no, and then they fought, and it's this whole, this has happened many times before, except it always ends in conflict and tragedy, so you're just thinking, oh, so this time it won't end that way, and Sasuke's gonna be redeemed. Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
But, and then here's what's weird. This is a problem with an ongoing story. You have to tread carefully, but this is one of those moments where it turns out that Naruto is the reincarnation of the sage's younger son.
Dumb one.
Yeah. Because we have to force this somehow. It's like, I have no idea what to think of this. This is probably the dumbest shit this manga has ever pulled. I mean, the whole concept of, oh, this character is a reincarnated version of something else, but, dude, if you're gonna be trying to pull this and say, he is the reincarnation of this legendary character that I've only just introduced over 600 chapters after the beginning of this series. It's like, you know, there's a big difference between, here's the beginning of a manga, here are these legendary characters, then 600 chapters later you say, and you are the reincarnation of this legendary figure, and you're like, oh my gosh, he's the reincarnation of this person who we've known about from the very beginning. This one, it's like, and you are the reincarnation of this legendary figure who I only just made up right now, this chapter.
Yeah.
So you haven't had time to sink in how awesome he was, because he's obviously meant to be Naruto in the first place, but we're trying to force this whole eternal conflict bullcrap by making you his reincarnation. And it, you know, honestly, Naruto's reaction kind of reflects my own, where he just kind of has this, what the hell, reaction, where he's like, he doesn't know what to make of it, basically. And I'm just like, that's exactly how I feel. It's like, I don't know what the crap to make of this.
I get the feeling there's going to be a little story about this in the next chapter.
And they even go so far, as to say, like, the older brother has ocular jutsu, and I'm like, so you really, really want to make this obvious, don't you? This is like being spoon-fed a freaking story.
I don't want to eat books. Books do not taste good.
No, they do not. And neither does this. This is stupid. We're moving on. Okay. It's time for us to talk about Toriko, chapter 271. Where, you know, where Chi-Chi continues to be a better character than anything Naruto has ever produced, quite honestly. And turns out he's a massive pervert. So we're definitely getting some pretty strong Dragon Ball vibes. Where he, in order to help them, he says, oh, it's like, Komatsu, you smell of a female. Give me your clothes. They smell of female. And I kind of love how how they just do the whole, it's like, oh, I was gonna reveal myself to you. I pretended to hibernate in order to surprise you, but, you know, you guys left. This is like, you just ignored me. And Torque was just like, well, you know, the full course meal was our top priority, and I figured you'd be a pain to deal with.
And we were right.
Yep, it is. And yeah, and then he leads them to this place where there is an apple, and all the gourmet hunters are like, he's like, oh, I must eat it. And he's like, haha, smacks them. And he says, this is one of the dishes in Acacia's full course meal, except it isn't. It's actually, you know, it just has the aroma of one of the dishes. So I really like the way this was introduced, the whole idea of, you know, just how epic the Acacia's full course meal is going to be. Just a regular apple that smells like the food, one of his foods.
It just has a scent. It just has a tiny scent of it.
Yeah, and it causes them all to lose control. I mean, these are the baddest characters in the entire series, and they completely lose control just by being exposed to the diluted scent of this food. And you're just like, oh my god. Oh my gosh, this is going to be amazing. And yeah, and they try to, Komatsu tries to convince him, you know, it's like, oh, you should cook with us. And he says, oh no, I won't. And he's like, I'll find even more girl scented clothes for you. And he's like, you mean it? And quite possibly the worst thing these characters have ever done, Toriko immediately says, like, is like, I'll ask Rin for you. Maybe she's got some pajamas she's done with. And then I'm just like, dude, you're not even married and you're already taking advantage of her. That's low, man. That's Goku levels of terrible husband right there.
Coco.
Coco, yes. Jeez, I should have remembered that. But yeah, and Coco is like, my fortune-telling business attracts a lot of female clients. I'll ask them if they have anything soaked in their smell for you. And of course, because he's handsome, it would work. But still, you're like, dude, what the crap?
Yeah, this terrible.
Yeah, this feels very much like a scene from Dragon Ball where Goku has to, you know, convince this old divine being who's a complete pervert. And I can't remember whether they were talking about pictures.
God, I wonder who that divine being is.
No, well, you know, it's later on. It's in the Buu saga where they're like trying to get his you know, his help. And it basically goes where Goku's like, oh hey, you know what, I've got a friend who's got, he's like, I've got this one friend who she's got really firm breasts, so either you can rope her or you can have a picture of her. And he's like, oh yeah, you should, he's like, I'm sure Bulma would let us, you know, would help us out. And immediately Vegeta is like, you douchebag, why my wife, why not your wife? And Goku's like, her breasts aren't firm anymore. I'm like, oh my gosh, Toriyama, what the hell are you doing? That's kind of what this feels like, you know? Especially, it's like, yeah, if anyone ever dares guess, dares, you know, to say Goku is nothing but the worst husband ever, just remember that moment where not only does he sell out one of his best friend's wife, who also happens to be one of his oldest friends, to this old pervert, he also then has the gall to say, It was like, well, my wife's breasts aren't firm anymore. You're just like, oh my gosh, Goku, you're awful. But anyway, they cook and they have a good time, and then they all eat a lot, and they set out. And then apparently something is awakening, and it's perfect timing, and I was kind of thinking, oh, what is this thing that is awakened? It's probably going to be something they have to fight. And so, and that ends the chapter, but yeah, it was a great chapter. I loved it. It was just so goofy and ridiculous, but it was just, it was
oh,
great.
Oh man, that Dragon Ball stuff, you managed to get me.
You should read more of Dragon Ball. That's
it really
shit.
Should be. I want to start from the very beginning, though, so I get the idea.
Where we started reading in Weekly Shonen Jump here was kind of, you know, it does break, have a pretty good even split there. But yeah, reading from the beginning would definitely be awesome. I should look at some of the omnibuses. But anyway, all right, it's time for Nisekoi chapter 116.
What do you think of that cover?
Disturbing with its implications.
Yeah.
Because, like, again, I'm having Attack on Titan vibes here, where I'm like, oh, hey, just grab her and eat her.
And not in
a sexual way, but literally in a, I will bite you in half and swallow your ruined body because I'm a giant.
I see more words. I'll eat you like a gummy bear. Eat your head off.
Like, I bite your head, crunch. Ugh.
This is not like gummy bears.
Yeah. Bouncing here and there and everywhere.
Oh, boy.
Man, that show was awesome. You shut up.
I never seen that show, to be honest.
You should watch it. It really is kind of great. It's like, it's one of those ones where you watch it and suddenly you're like, wow, that is quite possibly one of the best. The Princess Kala is probably one of the best female protagonists that anyone in Disney has ever written. Like, at all. She's, like, one of the ones that she's actually a, proactive protagonist. But anyway, back to the manga. They're basically doing study groups, and we have Marika that brings lunch for Ichijo and says, like, here, this lunch I made for you. It's this high-quality lunch. And then, yeah, and Chitoga's like, oh, yeah, well, I bet I could make a delicious lunch. And then it's basically a chapter of she cannot. She's basically makes terrible looking food, and this time it actually tastes terrible. So it definitely is like that one time they made a cake together, it was Raku's influence that made the cake good. And he eats it and it tastes awful, and she just makes food in the most creatively terrible ways. And somehow she manages to fry an egg and turn it into a cube, and even that tastes terrible.
I don't even know how that works. How do you do that?
Man, I wish I knew.
It's like a tree on cube. Hey, look, the tree on cube just disappears here.
Yeah. And, of course, Marika is constantly taunting her because it's like, oh, you must, you know, the key ingredient is love. It's like, you must not feel enough for him. And then she does kind of... Chitoga does have a moment where she's like, well, he's, you know, I really want to make him something good for him because, you know, he kept eating it no matter what. So it's actually kind of nice. It's a little bit of a twist on that whole Akane Tendo thing where she gets pissed off when, you know, Ranma eats her food and hates it because it tastes terrible. Even though she's tasted it before and knows that her food is awful, she still gets pissed at him. Chitoga, at least, you know, she's trying. She's really trying, but she realizes that, oh, hey, he's not just trying to mess with her. Her food really is that disgusting, and she actually appreciates that he ate it. You know, she says she owes it to him because he ate it. And so I kind of like that. That's a refreshing attitude. And, yeah, but turns out tragedy strikes when all the high-class ingredients that she had bought and were in the fridge, and they are, yeah, the door was left open, and they're all spoiled. All she has left is rice, so she makes rice balls, and they look awful, but they actually taste good. And she's like, I'm not going to tell you why they taste good, because, you know, I was thinking about you when I was making them. And it's kind of, aw. But at the same time, eh. Because, I mean, as entertaining as it is, and it had its good moments, at the same time, it is a chapter focusing specifically on a very tired old trope, which is this girl can't cook. And it's...
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't necessary because we've already got Onodera, who's a terrible cook. But with her, it works because it's a fresh take on it in that she makes great-looking food, but for some reason she destroys the flavor of anything she touches. With Chitoges,
something or whatever.
Yeah, with Chitoges, it's just straight up, it looks awful and it tastes awful. That's boring. That's the typical, you know, that's the trope played out straight. It's not interesting.
I mean, I don't cook as bad as Chitoges, to be honest.
Man, I cook.
Okay, the first time she tried the recipe again, she actually followed the recipe, because the first time she didn't follow the recipe. So I was like, okay, that makes sense. She didn't follow the recipe, but she follows and she still messes up. I was like, how do you do that?
No, seriously, you have to be incredibly skilled to mess up when following the recipe exactly. But anyway, it feels unnecessary because that didn't seem to like it needed to be a trait of hers. But at the same time, it still had interesting, you know, some interesting little moments in there that I thought worked out pretty well. All right. Okay, it's time to talk about Stealth Symphony, Chapter 6. And, yeah, we basically kind of get everything set up. You've got all the, you know, all the slaves that are basically being taken to be guinea pigs, and the Troma and what's-her-face, Alice?
Alice.
Yeah. She, sort of like, oh, hey, you know, it's, you know, we're kind of a, you know, this is kind of a little bit sketchy here, you know, where Alice is like, you know, they're not treating this, you know, like, you know, they're treating the people like cargo, and it doesn't look like they're legitimate laborers to working to pay off their debts. And, you know, we're kind of going to this pharmaceutical company with a sketchy reputation. And Troma's like, oh, you know, it's not our job to bring criminals to justice. We just, you know, they hired us. And so we need to do our job.
When I imagine Troma's voice, I swear, he sounds noble, so he always sounds heroic.
All right.
Thing like that. He's always going to sound heroic to me, maybe like Superman. I'm hearing Superman from him now for some reason.
Yeah, except for the part where he's condemning people to horrible chemical torture. Yeah, but, and then we kind of get a little bit of talking with the, you know, the cyborgs a little bit as they're going out, and they're going to, and you kind of have the wolves that are kind of neat, where they, like, talk by printing off these, like, little flags from their, these antennas from their back. And they're just like, don't overdo it. It's like, you know, you need to just stay back if it gets dangerous. And you're like, oh, hey, these things look kind of terrifying, but they're actually really nice. And yeah, and so they begin their attack, and then turns out that, you know, the security was ready, and they summoned a bamboo thrashing wind giant, basically made of shuriken and wind. And so you're just like, yeah, you're just like, well, this is gonna get badass. But
shuriken golem thingy.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is so promising.
A bamboo thrashing wind. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, let's hope that the next chapter delivers. I like ye. All right, but yeah, so I enjoyed this chapter. It was nice. It was entertaining, but not, it hasn't quite sold me completely. This is currently one of those manga that I'll read and think is good, but it doesn't have anything big that I feel.
Something unique about you, mean?
Yeah, you know, something amazing that has made me say, oh my gosh, this chapter is amazing. Kind of like, you know, Seven Deadly Sins finally did a couple weeks ago, you know?
Oh yeah, wait, what was that amazing thing?
Oh, well, I don't know. It's just King Arthur, for one. Duh.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's where I was like, dude, I am sold, like, but
you're bringing a legendary mythological figure into your series?
That takes balls, man.
You got me sold.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And you know, but yeah.
And he's not an old man. That's another thing.
Yeah, yeah. But so, anyway, it was a good chapter. What did you think, in general, since you've had the most changes in opinion with this?
It was all right, actually. It was a little confusing, first of all, because I didn't notice those robot wolves for the longest time. I was like, wait, what are those things? Are they enemies or are they allies? Like, oh, they're allies.
Yeah, at first I thought the way Jig kind of was looking back at them, worried, thought, wait, are those enemies? But then it turns out, no, they're not. I was like, oh, okay.
And then finding out how Riker lost her eyesight, I was like, yeesh, what the heck, man?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, and also where she mentions, like, she has three vision components. They're like, wait, three?
Yeah, I'm like three.
Where's the third one?
I bet the third eye. You know, for her.
On her, actually on her head. I guess I could see that.
But, yeah, right. some. If you think a little bit differently, yeah, mm-hmm. perverts.
Yep. All right, then. Time to talk about Bleach, chapter 574.
Yeah.
Where we kind of have a pretty awesome moment where a bunch of the squad, what was it? Jeez, I've forgotten the squad numbers.
No, wait. Kenpachi's 11.
11? Okay, for a second I was going to go 10, but then I was thinking, no, wait, that's...
10 is Hachigaya.
Yeah. Yeah, you have some of the squad 11 guys were like, oh, you can tell the spiritual pressure. This is Captain Zaraki. And then they, you know, they start the fight and, you know, well, they're about to start fighting, but, you know, and the dude, he can kind of, he can imagine his wounds being healed. So he's kind of completely broken, which is kind of what you need with Zaraki because he is completely broken. So, and then you kind of have a moment with some of the other guys where like, oh, hey, you know, if he's on top of that, you know, that stone fortress, he was there before that thing came rising up, so why didn't any of us sense his spiritual pressure until that thing went up? And so you're just thinking, ooh, he's learned how to control his spiritual pressure, has he? So, Yes, and then they start the fight, and it's basically every online role-playing battle by awful written by awful people ever.
Title page.
Yeah, it's that's weird. But yeah, it's
Envision.
Yeah, it's.
I thought that was him smiling. That might be him smiling. I can't tell.
It does kind of look like that. That's kind of weird. Okay, but that's creepy. But yeah, and it's basically like I said, this is every online forum battle role playing that you've ever seen, written by awful people. It was like, what do you think this is? It's lava. I cut the lava. It was like, oh, hey. It was like, her bones are made out of cookies. And, oh, hey, this, you're trapped in water. And now I'm going to squash you in this crack. And this is literally like one of those fights where someone that has absolutely no sense of boundaries as to what their character can do, and they just say, my character does anything. Thank and God. It's like watching... It's like watching two of them, you know, it's like watching two guys exactly like that go at each other, where one
I'm
is...
watching, it's refreshing and reading the posts every time.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, you got the one guy that he's like, I'm pulling out powers that my character has that he did not have before, and there's no rhyme or reason to his abilities. And the other one is just like, no, it doesn't work. I attack you with my sword. Like, good gosh, this is exactly what this is. This is amazing. I had no idea Kubo read those posts. Yeah, and it turns out that, you know, if he's distracted enough by the fact that Zaraki is holding Yachiru, that her bones are back to normal. So, you know, he's so distracted by fighting Kenpachi that he couldn't focus on Yachiru. So it does seem to be a case of the moment he stops thinking about it, it no longer is reality. So, okay, see how he could win that.
He thinks, therefore he is. So when he stops thinking, therefore he isn't.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that is it for the chapter. So this is, at first, when I first read this, I was like, yeah, this is okay. I mean, whatever. This is kind of a weird power. But realizing what it was a parody of, suddenly it's become the greatest chapter Kubo has ever written. This is just amazing.
Your insights on the chapters that we read actually made me realize what the heck those chapters are actually freaking amazing when I think about more.
I know. I do that to myself the moment I start
Toriko,
thinking about it.
The Bleach, the what was the other one before this? Wait, not Nisko, something else. Stealth Symphony.
All right, yeah. Yeah, I think, honestly, that's why I like listening to other manga and anime podcasts, because they overthink it, and I'm just thinking, it's like, oh, cool, you're overthinking it. Now I'm overthinking it, and this makes it a lot better. So
I'm not supposed to be going to overthink things.
Yeah, well, long live the king. Now I'm the king.
Well, guess what?
What?
Long live the king.
Hey, back off. I already did that to you, bastard.
I'm a ghost. Anyways.
Yeah. Alright, and that is the end of the Weekly Shonen Jump Online chapters. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back with the non-online chapters, by which I mean they are online, but they are also not in this magazine, sadly. So
yeah,
we will be just quick break, and we'll be right back. And we are back from our little break, and it is time for us to continue talking about the commentaries, I mean, the latest chapters. Starting with...
chapter 83 of Assassination Classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Alright, so this one is the finale of the Cops and Robber game, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Alright, excellent. Yep, so that one is basically... Yeah. No, wait, I think we talked about this one, didn't we?
You did?
I distinctly remember mentioning how clever the ending is when they trick... Koro sensei, you know?
We went through all the Shogun.
Yeah, we did. Oh, yeah, Robert, I'm checking out. Yeah, there hasn't been a new chapter recently. Okay.
This is what happens when we take too long.
Yeah, well. In that case, let's go ahead and talk about Shokugeki no Soma. What you got for me? Which chapter are we this time?
63.
All right. Mo, describe it.
Okay, so it's pretty much talking about it starts off with talking about Nakiri Alice using the machines, and then we see her using the machines, but then it's like she doesn't need to use machines all the time.
Well, yeah, she still cooks.
Yeah, she still cooks, of course. Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to how Somo's gonna come up with his own thing to comp to with his own bento. And he's gonna make a nori bento, probably the best bento, tasting bento ever. I don't know what a nori bento is, but of course this chapter had its usual foodgasm, is what people call it.
Yeah, it sure did.
And it had a character that usually didn't get much screen time, Ryoko, the one who makes the alcohol.
Oh yeah, yeah. That is true. We kind of got to focus on her a little bit. We also got, let's see. Yeah.
Apparently, he's gonna use some sort of. He's gonna do something with candy. And I was like, oh no, he's gonna do something with the candy.
Yeah. Yeah, you're just like, wait, what do you? Oh dear.
It's like, well, so me and those kids were doing a different show. It was like, candy.
And
what can I do with anything?
Yeah, I guess we'll kind of have to see what we do with that. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think of this chapter overall?
I liked it. With the way how Alice is generally shown to be like, it was generally shown to be like the she scored the highest in the preliminaries.
Yep.
And yeah, she acts so nonchalant like Soma does in a way. Like when they talk to each other like they're old friends.
Yeah, she is kind of a fun character just because, you know, she is very much, I'm going to beat you, but at the same time, she's not like, you know, she's not the stereotypical arrogant opponent. She's more just like, yeah, I know I'm going to beat you, but also, you know, she's not all about just like, oh, I will defeat you. It's more just like, yeah, cool, whatever. I mean, obviously I'm going to beat you, but I'm also going to be a full-rounded person. Not just a complete jerk. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was definitely a good chapter. I liked it a lot.
I liked it too.
Yep. All right. What do we have next?
Okay. Now we move on to the Kodansha chapters.
Yes, we need to talk about Fairy Tail. We've got two chapters to talk
about. Yeah, we've got two.
Oh, dear. All right. Let's see. Let me... while I'm pulling those up, you go ahead and start and give a quick summary of the first one.
I really like the color spread Mashima did. The color spread where all the characters are like walking, all the prominent characters are walking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that one. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and also, yeah, that was kind of fun. I did think it was kind of amusing where at first I was like, huh, there's a noticeable shift from behind to the front where you notice people going from being more clothed to less clothed. But then I saw that Bacchus was back there and Kana, and I was like, well, no, never mind. But still, you got the very tip.
I don't think carried by those two guys.
Yeah.
Even Hibiki.
Yeah. And but still at the front, you've got Natsu, Sting, and Lucy right there, and you're just like, yeah, those three don't wear a lot of clothes ever. Yeah, I also kind of feel like pointing out, because it's kind of amusing, just sort of like the way that Evergreen is looking up at how Elfman is carrying Lisanna, and you kind of have to wonder if she's thinking, man, I want to do that. Because, you know, amusement. But, alright, so the chapter itself is, well, it's a really badass chapter is what it is. Basically, it's just Wendy fighting against the demon guy who's cutting everything, and she manages to, you know, she actually does manage to defeat him by sucking in all the air and, you know, the energy surrounding her. And she actually manages to power up and win her own fight, which is really awesome because she's kind of a character that doesn't happen for a lot. And so, but we kind of end the chapter with, you know, her realizing, oh no, even though I destroyed Face, it's still activating. What will I do? And that's kind of where we end the chapter.
Yeah, she actually put up a dang good fight.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually look like eye candy for once, personally.
Yeah, it is nice that she is, you know, she's kind of had a good fight for her coming, a long time coming, just because, you know, for so long she's meant to be the Moe character, and that's kind of a little weird and creepy.
She's meant to be support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the fact that she's able to actually win herself is nice. And, alright, let's see, we've got... Okay, we've got chapter 378.
Friends Forever.
Yep. Where it's basically, it's everyone fighting and, you know, fighting against the demons, kind of pairing off and realizing that, well, we're in trouble. And then Charlotte does this whole emotional scene of, oh, you know what? I'm going to rewrite it and detonate Face is, but...
Gosh, that sounds familiar. What cat have I seen has done that? They're going to sacrifice themselves.
They're immune against explosions, I tells you. No, but yeah, it is basically the entire chapter is Charlotte saying, Wendy, you need to escape. I'll sacrifice myself for you. And Wendy's saying, I can't escape. I won't leave you behind. And besides, I'm too weak as it is. Okay. So we'll die together. And they both do that. And, you know, it would have been really touching except for the fact that, shame on you, Mashima. You're not going to trick me again. I don't believe you. Not one bit. So, you know, it's meant to be touching, but it's undermined by the fact that it's very obvious he's not going to kill her. But ignoring that fact, it was kind of touching, you know, the scene where they're just, you know, they're tearfully looking at each other just as they're about to press the button. You know, that is touching, but then, of course, just a couple pages later, it turns that Doron Bolt
showed up and managed to save them.
I'm like, oh, hey, where the hell did you come from?
Mashima, shift it away.
Oh, please, no. But yeah, it was...
It were 10 years. Well, it were 10 years.
Yeah, well. It, yeah, I was kind of, I don't know, this last chapter was okay, but at the same time, it's kind of hard to enjoy because you know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, he did it before, remember, with Pappy? Oh, no, I'm going to take this.
He's done it multiple times with many characters, so it's really hard. You know, it's really hard to take it seriously ever.
I mean, the only character he's done it with actually succeeded with was a minor character, Shimon, Simon, whatever his name was.
Speak it in English, dang it.
Simon.
Yes.
Sorry. Shimon. Nah.
Don't you dare. No, but, yeah, anyway. Darn weeaboo. No, but, yeah, the thing, yeah, but especially since it happened so recently, the last time he tried to fake us out with that, and we're kind of thinking, oh, that would be really good if he actually went through with it, but then this time you're like, oh, yeah, right, you're even less likely to sacrifice Charlotte and Wendy than you are Happy.
Well, if their healer died, they'd be screwed, wouldn't they?
They would, which would make it a really good plot twist.
She exploded.
Well, what? She's dead. Yeah, that would be kind of like, oh, wow. But, alright. And now let's talk about the Seven Deadly Sins, Chapter 71.
The man that was too late.
Mm-hmm. Turns out that Galder is actually dead. Or not dead, but actually defeated.
He's just been KO'd.
Yeah, and Dreyfus is pretty damaged, and so, wait a minute.
See, that's how it's supposed to be there.
We discussed this one already.
We did?
Yeah, we did. I'm sorry, I was doing 71 instead of 72, like we're supposed to do. 72. Okay.
Oh, yeah, 72, yeah, 72.
Yeah.
Title and you were talking about something, I'm like, wait, why am I going with this? I don't know why I'm going with this.
Yeah, no, that was...
Yeah, so the basic 72 starts with where we left off, King appearing.
Yeah, he's kind of pissed. Yeah, he's like, you couldn't protect Diane, and, you know, he's angry, and he was like, why can't I ever protect what matters most to me? And then he's going to, he's going to fight, what's his face, dang it, where'd his name go?
Helbrum,
there it is. Jeez. There he is. Eesh. But yeah, and so they fight, and it's a pretty badass fight, except even with a giant teddy bear that shows up. And, you know, they're just constantly going at each other for several pages, and King does the whole, like, you know, his evil eyes. Mm-hmm. And then there's mention to him, between him and Helbrum, talking about things that happened 700 years ago, and so you're like, wait a minute, what's going on here? And then Helbrum reveals his true self, which turns out to be...
A fairy?
Mm-hmm.
Fairy? Well, that makes sense. Well, to talk about a double entendre, he's fairy.
Yeah. But yeah, it's kind of weird, and also that helmet, I think he was... Oh. I think he was the guy that was in during the fighting tournament, the announcer.
He was?
Yeah, he mentions back in Vizel, I would have never thought that was you. Because of that filthy helmet you had on, so...
Oh, yeah, it's right.
I think that's part of the problem, is that I have a hard time remembering some stuff from that time period, because it kind of all flowed, sort of melded together.
Arc was going on, 7 Days was getting popular, but it didn't get simul-published.
Yeah, not only that, but at the time when I was reading it, I was kind of thinking, eh... This is good, but this.
Yeah, you're like full tournament arc, and I'm like, oh god, please, no, not another tournament arc. I mean, it's early, but please, just get over it and don't ever do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Never again.
But yeah, so basically, it's gonna be a fight between fairies, and that was like, what a twist, and all that.
Fairies. Mm-hmm. You know, if they were pirates, that'd be funny as heck. Pirate fairies.
That'd be. Okay.
Funniest thing was, I saw somewhere, I don't know, online or in something. And there's a Tinkerbell movie, and it has a pirate fairy. I'm like, wait, what the hell?
Pirate fairy. Yes, indeed. All right. Okay. Yep, and okay, we have one more chapter to talk about. The side story, That Woman Urza.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the last one that we're going to talk about today.
Wait, what about...
That other one that came out after this one. So we're saving it for next week.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's basically Urza, you know, playing pool. And here's the weird thing, is that you have to keep in mind, let's see, story is the main character, Urza. Yeah, it doesn't say when this chapter is set. And that's important, because later on we have a little bit of a reveal. But anyway, Urza discovers that there is, a woman named Moulin Rouge that's committing crimes under the name of Fairy Tale. And so she goes and faces her, and Moulin is this punk-looking woman, and Urza is always like, you're picking a fight with Fairy Tale, huh? And so they start getting into a fight, but Moulin is like a thief and steals Urza's panties. And Urza gets pretty darn mad. And then, interestingly enough, it's worth pointing out that Moulin Rouge shoots at her with what looks like a flintlock pistol instead of the more modern revolvers that we see there. But yeah, she tries shooting Urza, but Urza just deflects the bullets. And what's kind of cool is how it goes, and the bullets knock the all the balls into the holes, and so she's playing pool now with the bullets, and it's kind of coming back from the beginning, which is kind of amazing. And then, of course, Moulin Rouge is always like, oh, I'm sorry, and is like, you know, all the coins I stole, it was all for Sunny, who's sick. And it's doing the whole, oh, she had a reason for it. And Urza's like, I don't care, and just slaps her. And it's like, you sullied the name of my guild. I don't care about anything besides that. But then afterwards, she's like, you know what? If you want work, you could just actually join us. And then Moulin Rouge is all, I was like, oh, isn't she cool, Sunny? And then it turns out Sunny's a mouse. And everyone's like, wait, what? Yeah, and that was that chapter. Now, one thing that I'm sure that a lot of people will mention is that, and that I didn't get at first, was that, well, I guess, should we mention it now? Do you think?
No.
Save it until last time. Okay, yeah. Let's just say that when you hear next week's episode, keep in mind that there's a reveal in there that I had no idea and was actually kind of pissed when people were saying, oh, this is what happened, or this is what this is. And I was like, wait, where are you getting that? And it's like, that's not true. That's not mentioned in the chapter at all. And then, you know, it just sort of, then we get the reveal, the actual confirmation in the next chapter. And I was like, oh, hey, look at that. But, yeah. Just
well, there were hints. There were hints hinting at the hints.
Minor hints, yeah. But, yeah, just keep in mind that while it doesn't say when this chapter was set exactly, it was set in the past. So.
That's the only hint we're giving.
Mm-hmm. Well, people probably already know by the time this comes out. But, anyway. And I think that does it for the chapters this week, doesn't it?
Yeah, finally.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. Well, let's go ahead and wrap things up. This has been Manga Cubed, episode 91 for the week of March the 31st,
yes.
2014. This week we went over Fairy Tail Volume 36, One Piece Volumes 13, 14, and 15. And we also discussed the regular weekly chapters that we discuss. And now it is time for us to wrap things up, starting with the author comments for the week. Starting with One Piece's Eiichiro Oda. My staff is smirking. They're watching Baby Metal on YouTube and smirking. What?
I don't know. I looked it up just a while ago, and I still don't know. I think it's some sort of metal pop girl. Oh yeah, it's a metal gay girl band. I think that's a new thing on the rise, apparently. Yes.
I watched it, and there were
Japanese girls singing metal.
Yeah, I watched it, and there were some parts where I was like, "Oh, the chorus is kind of catchy," but yeah, someone showed me that. I don't remember who, but if I ever find out who, I'm punching them. I think it might have been you, actually.
No, it wasn't me.
Nah, fine.
I didn't even know yet.
Dang it. But yeah, it's kind of weird. It's basically, yeah, on the article that it was talking about, it was like, oh, yeah, they're trying to do a completely new thing where it's basically J-pop but mixed with metal. And so it's like, you know, it's kind of catchy, but if you ever show this to an actual metalhead, they may never forgive you.
They'll actually beat the crap out of you with metal. And not, I don't mean the music metal. I mean actually live metal.
We will find pieces of metal.
I hope it's a golf club.
No, it'd be heavier than that. All right,
I
let's
want
move
to be
on.
A golf club. I like golf. Anyways, World Triggers, Daisuke Ashihara. A small oversight, but I forgot to put the in Kakizaki Squad on the map in the spread last week.
Oh.
Like, hey, what about us? Oh,
yeah, at least he admits to it.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, me neither. But yeah, Naruto's Masashi Kishimoto. The Starbucks menu is full of so much English that I get really nervous when ordering.
Yeah, you get nervous. Well, you don't see how nervous I get when I look at all the English in Japanese, and I'm like, why is there so much English in Japanese, and yet the rest of it is Japanese.
It's like, what is this English? I do not understand.
When I play some Japanese game, it's some of the words are in English, and then all of a sudden, I start playing the game, and everything's in Japanese. It's like, what the heck's going on?
Yeah,
why
that's
you
weird.
That? I hate that.
Indeed. All right, moving on.
Japan. Anyways, Toriko's Mishitoshi Shimokuro. So sorry for taking last week off. I'll stay focused and do my best from now on. Do a marathon, man.
Yeah. Well, that's probably why he took the time off.
Yeah.
All right. Nisiko is Naoshikoumi. Onodera's ending song is amazing. I can't wait for the second anime DVD. Also, yeah, I watched that, and it's weird. There's, like, these weird moments where... this, like, weird moment at the end where she's running up to Prince Charming Raku, and she's holding this weird sort of phallic-shaped kind of key-shaped thing, and she stabs him in the chest with it, and then she's about to kiss him, and then his head explodes into candies. And
hey.
I don't know what's going on.
I think only one there's only one character I know who understands, and that's Orihime.
Yeah, except I don't understand one bit of what happens. Although there's kind of a cute moment where these little doll or, you know, little figurine, Raku and Onodera, lean forward to kiss, but then she kind of trips and falls over. And it's kind of cute, but yep. All right, then, next one.
Stealth Symphonies, Ryogo Naruto. I'm struggling through Dark Souls 2 as a bastard. Looks like I'll be relying on pyromancy, fucking bastard.
Yeah, well, get a better computer.
I know that. I'm still upset.
Yeah, all
right. I will be playing Dark Souls 2 right now.
Yep, all right. Bleaches, Tite Kubo, I'm suffering from allergies. No!
No, I'm like, I'm finally better. Winter's over. Wait, yay. Allergies? Oh, God,
he's
no.
Like, no! All right, then.
Give me a break here. Write a better series, dang.
Yeah, sure, that's it, totally. Alright then, it's time for the rankings. Where shall we place each chapter, do you say?
Let's see.
Yeah, fourth place, I'm going to have to say Bleach. It's not a good chapter by any stretch of the imagination, but my little realization about what it actually is made it a million times better. So, yep. And Mo, what's your number four?
World Trigger.
All right.
It was an alright chapter with the whole, you know, revealing that there are other ways to use the triggers and the horns being, you know, oh, they're attached to us, so we don't have to lose our weapons. Like, that's pretty dang crafty right there.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I can see that. Yeah, World Trigger is actually my number three. Just because, you know, it was a really good action chapter and another good, you know, chapter in an ongoing action story. So it's just well crafted. I like it. All right. Your number three?
Nisekoi with the Lunchbox Bento one.
Boo.
Boo!
I didn't
okay.
like it.
Well, yeah. Well, still, it was still a bit better than some of the others I've read. Uh-huh. Even though, you know, it was more of a Chitoge-centric chapter. Developing her a bit. Actually, making her cooking be less dumb than, you know, bad.
Yeah,
I mean, at least you can make rice balls a little better.
Yeah.
And it shows that she's improved.
Well, true. All right, then. My number two is Toriko. Just because it was, you know, it was just really funny. And, yeah. And seeing all the characters become absolute sleazebags was kind of entertaining. Yep. All right, number two for you?
Also my number two, Toriko, because of the, you know, Flavor Hermit Chi-Chi being all, oh, and, you know, explaining about how they, you know, how he was, like, waiting for them, and they're, oh, they're going to ignore me, and then all of a sudden, showing that he's actually a wave of a pervert, and the guy's even being sleazy, I think, just saying, like, oh, well, I know some girl, I'll just ask her for panties, and I'll give them to you, or something like that.
Yeah, well, he doesn't even want panties. He just wants clothes that smell like them. Which, in a way, seems more disturbing.
Well, at least it's not panties.
Although, at the same time, you start to wonder if that's Toriko's thing as well. Because, you know, his sense of smell is his greatest sense. So you're just like,
He's still gonna watch. When he goes to see Rin and he's at home, he's like looking around like
starts smelling her clothes. It's like Toriko,
why? This one smells really good. I'll take this one. Like, and he's like, Toriko, what was my favorite shirt? It was pink and stuff. Like,
I have no idea.
Something ate it, but it got away. So you have to get a new one.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd laugh if he takes it and is like, you know what, I'm keeping this for myself. Like, forget you. All right, and in first place we have?
It starts with an O and ends with a E.
Yep, it's One Piece, as
usual. I thought to say P for some reason, I don't know why.
Nobody pees in that series. Oh, wait, actually, yes, they do. Luffy just peed in one of the volumes we just talked about.
Oh, he did?
Uh-huh. One of the only manga series where people take a piss, not counting some of the more disturbing examples of the genre that are around.
I wouldn't want to mention those because those... Mm-hmm. But yeah, the chapter itself was great.
Mm-hmm. It was. It was really good. I mean, yeah, Kuros' backstory is absolutely heartbreaking. And Usopp's expression at the end is just, oh my gosh, I need to read the next chapter now. You know,
I really do want to read it right now.
And on that note, let us end this episode. As usual, if you have any questions or comments, send them to burninglizardstudios@gmail.com or visit Burning Lizard Studios or go on Twitter @burninglizard. And we will be able to answer your questions online. But that being said, remember, the manga is always better. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week.